Don't forget your books, you know you gotta learn the golden rule. The teacher tells you stop your playing, get on with your work. And be like Johnny Too Good, don't you know he never shirks. He's coming along.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference. Today is Monday, February 6, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 712-770-4160, and our participant code is 385698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is in Luke chapter 6, verses 27 to 38. Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 38. Topic is love of enemies. I say unto you, which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid him to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if love them which love you, what thank have you? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom you hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest, for he is the kind unto or the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. Okay, that was Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 38. Okay, we don't have a particular topic per se. Jen, yeah, I see you're in, okay. Don't have a particular topic per se, but we do want to talk about some of the things we're doing and putting together, and we need volunteers. We always need volunteers. Everybody should be volunteering. Everybody should be working together to do what has to be done to save this nation. And we only get a handful of people that actually do most of the work. Everybody can put in an hour here or an hour there. We're not asking for people to put in full time. We're not asking for people to put in time every single day, but to give us a few hours a week doing things, preparing for the things that we need to be doing. And right now, we're trying to build a larger investigative and research committee. We need more people to help us investigate and research different things, make sure that we get it right so we're going to the courts. We've got the facts, and we've got the proof with us. We can't make any note of any concern, anything going on in the courts without, having the necessary documents. And just because it's written on a website means absolutely nothing. I am so tired of reading websites. You know, I there are certain issues that I have interest in, and I'm constantly looking out to see what's new, what's going on. And there are so many people out there that just put up so much garbage. And this has been true also, you know, trying to figure out the common law, trying to figure out the court system, people coming in with all this crazy fiction and all this nonsense. And I don't know what it is. I mean, and when they bring forth their errors, they refuse to correct them, no matter how much you show them. You know, there's a lot of talk out of false news, and I've heard in a few places where they're really trying to spin to the other side. I heard recently someone calling Alex Jones the fake news. I mean, he does exaggerate. My opinion, he exaggerates, but I think he's reasonably on the mark.
But the truth of the matter is, the problem where the real false news is within these major news networks that we have on our TVs. I mean, I am just so sick and tired of reading and hearing and seeing just one false piece of information after another. It's repeated here, and it's just regurgitated through the whole system, and it's repeated over there. And they just don't seem to stop. It's time to hold them accountable, you know. So we want to do something about this. We want to start to reveal and go after these news programs that claim to be news and they're not. And bring it into the courts. Make the point. We have to do something with this fake news. And the Second Amendment protects these people, and clearly they're not news. You know, they're fake news. They're commentators. They're not necessarily bringing you the news. But anyway, that's just one of the things. We want to get a news program going through National Liberty Alliance ourselves. We're working on something with a, let me see, what would you call it? I had it on the tip of my tongue. I'll get back to that in a minute. But anyway, we need a lot of people to do a lot of investigating, okay? We have a lot of issues that are going on out west. Everybody knows about that. We talk about that often enough. There's three or four major court cases out there. We're trying to deal with the problems within those court cases by bringing the issues into one court case here in New York and going after these judges for warring against the Constitution and warring against the people. And so we have to have the facts. We've got a lot of information that needs to really go out to be checked. We've got a lot of information on the assassination of Finnegan, Lavoie Finnegan, and we need people to check all this stuff out and, you know, make sure we are accurate. So again, you know, please, anybody that could put some time, get a hold of Jan. You can find his number up on the directory at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on the directory and get a hold of Jan and let her know you want to join one of the committees. You know, we're also going to be doing something with the habeas corpuses and the mortgages again. We have a committee put together. I think we have about five people on that committee right now, which will be working the paperwork. And if we can work and teach these people the process and they're able to, you know, get it, once we can get it out and coming out correctly, and we know that it's correct, then we'll start filing these things again. But we need more help there too. We also want to get a blog going on our website under our news, a weekly blog, maybe a couple of people writing a blog, you know, each one of them maybe bringing in a story once a week. We want to focus in on news that's important, news concerning the courts, what's going on in the courts, news concerning what's going on with the administration in Washington. But we want to stay focused on what it is that we are concerned with and what we want people to learn about. Now, we're also building a team to try to build up a virtual TV station and get a regular TV program going. Where someone will be coming in reporting on a lot of different things. So it's in the beginning of its plannings. We're looking at different virtual layouts, and we're hoping to get that going maybe in a couple of weeks. I don't know. But we need volunteers. I mean, look at, we have to bring the news on a daily basis or a couple of times a week at least. And we need people to go out and get the news and make sure that it is, get it from two or three sources, make sure that it's real news. So again, you know, bloggers, people who can write, we need managers to help manage this process. So we'll call them editors. We've got a couple of people that we're working with, and at that level, hopefully it'll all work out and we'll be able to manage all this, bring it all together. Digest it and deliver it in a way that is, that's digestible, I guess, and that is truthful and accurate. also, of course, you know, everybody should be involved in their own from local business and what's going on. You should be getting together at least once a month with local liberty groups, building committees of safety. We're still building committees of safety. We still need lots and lots of people to take part in the jury administration on every county. We need people in every single county in the nation. So we need more people volunteering on that end. We need people to become more educated, to be able to understand and what's really going on, understand the common law, understand the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and how one is, they're all dependent upon each other. It's really, you know, one whole, I don't know what you would call it. I mean, we've got three different documents, but it really makes one whole. It creates our nation. And so we're going to be talking about different court cases. Hopefully we'll get that started soon, where we'll look at specific court cases, Marbury versus Madison, very important court case, okay? You know, everybody should be aware of United States versus Williams, a very important court case. Judiciary Act of 1789, a very important piece of law. I think it was the first act of Congress. I think it was. Anyway, it was very early on. You know, there's a lot of very important court cases that we really should be looking at and appreciate and understand how we can use these in the courts. We have an issue going on right now with this judge. Goodness, I know his name. His name isn't Roberts, but it's very close to that. I don't have his name written in front of me right now, but this federal judge who is now served the papers. Someone filed papers in the court, and he's trying to put an injunction on the president to prevent him from protecting our borders. And, you know, we're looking deeper and deeper into that to be more accurate on exactly what's going on. But the bottom line, the way I understand it, we have a judge telling the president of the United States to disobey the law and not uphold the law. And this president is saying that he is going to uphold the law and he's going to execute that which is on the books. He's going to protect this nation. You want to change the law? Go see Congress. Go talk to the Congress, the U.S. Congress, the legislators. Change the law if you don't like it. But certainly Congress can't even change laws that would destroy our boundaries and put us in jeopardy. The president has a duty. He took an oath to protect and defend not just this Constitution, but this country. Defending this country is defending this Constitution. Defending this Constitution is defending this nation. But in any event, he has every right and he's got a duty to execute the law as it is, unless the law is repugnant. He has the power and the authority of ignoring it, too. I mean, you know, he can nullify it just by saying no. He has the power, and I don't know that he knows this or not. We're going to write it. We're going to write in a 2-3-page paper right now. Hopefully, we'll get it out tomorrow. We'll get it out by fax and mail in an information to the president, and hopefully to make him aware of things that he may not be aware of. And we'll talk more about that paper next Monday, maybe. but this president needs to understand that he can thumb his nose at the court. He does not have to obey an order of any. Who is this guy? He's not even on the United States Supreme Court. I mean, at least if it came from the United States Supreme Court, you would maybe consider it a little more. But even there, if that order came from the United States Supreme Court to the President of the United States to not obey the law of the land and file some kind of an, you know, allow someone to file some kind of an injunction and to even consider hearing it, it's insane. It's ludicrous. It doesn't make any sense at all. The guy has got to be an enemy of liberty, an enemy of this nation. Any judge doing that, they should not be trying to assault the president of the United States, who's finally we got a guy doing his job. I mean, this guy has done more in his past week and a half or however long he's been in power than any sitting president at all. I mean, he's doing everything he has said he would do. And in his first 100 days, he's going to far surpass, if he continues on this path that he's on, far surpass what he promised, and do a hell of a lot more of things that he generally talked about, but will then, you know, execute different things to get manufacturing back into this nation, to bring back business, to strengthen America economically. But he also has to do this without breaking the law. If he has to make a choice between breaking the law or bringing business back into this nation, well, he's got to obey the law. And that's the key. And I kind of think he understands this. But if not, to be sure, you know, we are going to be sending him some more papers. So we'll see where that goes in the next week or so. I understand, I can't confirm any of this yet because, you know, I read here, I see there, and I don't even know what truth is anymore. But from what I understand, there's supposed to be a hearing next this coming Friday of this week. And today is Monday. So we need to get a paper in ourselves. We need to get our voice into the mix. We need to make our statement. And so tomorrow, I know I'll be spending my time trying to get the details and file a paper in that court, file a paper in our court, and file also a paper of information to the president concerning this issue. And hopefully and being able to enlighten him on nullification to just ignore the court. If I was the president of the United States, I would just send a message back to him and let him know, I'm not going to be there on Friday. Why would I want to go to a court that is unconstitutional, that is trying to tell me to break my oath? That's subversion. I'm not going to do it. And I would just ignore it. And that's what he should do. I don't know what he's going to do yet, but we're going to find out. All right. And again, you know, we need more details on this issue to get more of the facts of the dates and so on. Okay. Let's see. Let's go over to Jen. Do we have any questions come in?
No, this week everyone was very well informed. I had no questions at all.
Okay. All right. And again, let me remind everybody, we're building, still building grand jury administrations. We have free courses. We have finished a book, a new jurist book. I think it's better than the old one. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to add into that book also a copy of the Constitution and also the Declaration of Independence. It's going to make it a little thicker, of course, twice as thick. But, you know, if we can get a good price on it and get something going with that, we can offer that booklet. But we can also offer it as a PDF download also. So, and in this way, everybody would have everything they need to really prepare them to sit as a jurist, to sit, whether it's grand jury or trial jurist, to really understand how things generally work and also have the law of the land, have the Constitution, have the Declaration of Independence, and have the Bill of Rights all in one booklet. And I'd love to be able to get it out as a pocket booklet like we did with the grand jury booklets originally. But again, it'll be a lot thicker. And you wouldn't need to have a pocket constitution then because we'd have it all in one. And every juror should have this. There's also, I guess that's it for that. Again, I mentioned this a little earlier. We are still building committees of safety. If you don't have a committee of safety going in your county, get up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on the COS. Watch the videos, get some information, go to your local liberty groups, get them together and bring this issue to them and ask them to work together to get a committee of safety. Instead of getting together as liberty groups trying to figure out what to do, let's get together as liberty groups, become committees of safety, and let's do things. Let's get things done. Let's make the local governments obey the Constitution. And we do that by befriending them. Not by fighting with them, not by assaulting them, but bringing them in little by little. We have a plan. It's all written out, and it all starts with a relationship with your sheriff and really, you know, kind of enticing him into working with the people. And it should be an easy thing to do that. And he wants to be, look at, he's a political animal too, to a big degree, because he wants to be reelected. So if the people are doing things and you get things moving, he'll get involved and he'll become educated. And then you'll be able to make the relationships with all of the rest of the local governments, especially when they see the sheriff has signed on with you guys, you know? Okay.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Can I make a prediction?
Okay.
I don't believe that judge is going to do anything or Trump is going to do anything. I think it's all grandstanding. He's a district court judge. He's just looking.
I know. He's a nobody.
It's like Al Sharpton. You know, he figures, bad press is better than no press. He knows he has no jurisdiction. Look, go and try to sue some big corporation and say you want the CEO there. They won't summons him to a court case. Mm-hmm. You know?
I agree with that. It's not going to happen. It's just news.
All he's doing is making news.
Of course, that's what it is. But what I did hear is that he has to answer by Friday. And my position is not to answer. Exactly.
He doesn't have to answer anything ever. And what's he going to do? Get the police after him? Who's he going to get to? What's he going to arrest him? I mean, this guy is an idiot.
This has always been, he's a moron. There's no doubt about it.
He's an idiot. I don't believe this clash between the powers.
Yeah.
Well, I would hold off writing any papers because I think it's going to go away by tomorrow or the next day. I think it's just somebody trying to make news. And this
let's look deeper into what's supposed to happen on Friday and what the response of the administration is. I haven't seen the. News report from the president, the administration. They usually do a press thing every day, especially on Mondays. And I didn't watch today's press release. So maybe in there is our answer. If
he actually put a paper out like that, my prediction is you'll see that guy off the bench within a very short time, because Donald Trump will go after him, will make the right people go after him to take him off the bench. He won't do it himself, but he will engage the judicial people to take this loose cannon off the bench. That's my prediction. I mean,
the unfortunate thing is I'm not aware of judges being removed. I mean, even going back into history, but obviously there is a provision for this. For I think a couple of ways this could happen. First of all, the Constitution says that judges get to serve as long as they're in good behavior. Any judge that is not in good behavior is a judge that is warring against the Constitution. He's not obeying the law of the land. That's a judge that's in bad behavior. And so if he's in bad behavior, he doesn't get to serve. Well, what are they doing serving? How do we get rid of them? We do know one way to get rid of them is when we, the people, take back the process, we will indict. We'll consider the case, and if the grand jury makes an indictment, then he's removed from office, okay? Because now he's got to go to trial. And he's going to trial for whatever it is the grand jury says he's going to trial for. And I know from our perspective, it's warring against the Constitution. It's always the same thing. Also, there is this case that we talked about, we're still investigating, concerning the fact that, or the claim, that these judges have not been taking the real oath. And every case since 1991, I believe it was, that we've heard, again, we haven't confirmed this. I haven't confirmed it, let me put it that way. And so these judges aren't even on the bench. So, yeah, then he can, if Trump acted on that, he can just start appointing people and filling those spaces and ignore them. Go home, go away. You never took your oath. I'm filling that office because you didn't take your oath. This is what we have to inform the president of. And he can change the landscape of America literally overnight by getting judges in there that raise their hand and swear to take this oath. Now, the other possible way that I think that a judge could be removed is from a higher court, okay? Look at the highest court in America is the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court is responsible for all the lower courts. They're responsible to send down writs commanding these judges or these people to take their oaths, to obey the law. And as soon as we get this new judge in, we're going to go after him to make sure he understands that this is what the United States Supreme Court should be doing. Why ain't they doing it? Are you going to do it? You know? And we need to force these people to obey the law. And if they refuse to take their oath, okay, then they can send them home, you know, with their bags. But again, look at it. If they haven't taken the oath, the office is vacant, isn't it? They're not filling that
That's
office.
Right. That's right.
So let's get the president to fill those
oaths. Isn't that an easy way to take the nation back?
That's the easiest way. If we can get President Trump to understand that. Now, we've heard that President Trump has been involved in the courts. He knows that they're corrupt. He has seen the problem, and he's sick to his stomach also of it. That's what I have heard anyway. Again, I don't have confirmation of this stuff, but, again, this is what you hear and you read. You can't trust news anymore. You sit down and read the New York Times. You can't trust the Times anymore. You can't trust Fox News, CNN, whatever that MSNBC is or whatever that is. You can't trust any of them. They're constantly contradicting each other, and they're constantly, and all of them leave out little pieces. They all leave out the same little pieces, don't they? So what's that all about? So that's conspiracy, in my opinion, and that's another problem. And you can't figure it. The fake news is the news networks. That's the fake news. And that's what we need to really get going and pushing, you know, on. But anyway, let me see if there's anything else. I have nothing else. Is there anybody that needs to make an announcement, Jan?
Yeah, I think Robert probably has some information if he made it out today. Okay. And I think Ollie had some, too, that he'd like to share.
All right, let's pull them up.
Yeah, I got a few things. Today was the first day of the trial in Nevada. This was the first day of jury selection. But something else that came up today is that there was an incident that happened in a Nevada detention center some time back. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but somebody got stabbed, and it was in the area where a lot of our patriots were. And so when the guards came in, they made everybody strip down to their underwear. You know, they had to find the weapon. And they took these patriots out in the hallway in their underwear to where the women on the women's side were whooping and hollering at them and everything. And some of the guards that came in were female. And one of the females guards was making sexist remarks about one of the patriots. And when they went to searching, instead of male guards searching these guys, it was female guards. And this one of the patriots that she had made these remarks about, she just walked up and grabbed his stuff and frisked him good and was making all kinds of remarks and everything. And the word has come out that every one of the patriots that were there feel like they were sexually molested. They filed charges. Of course, nothing happened. And we didn't get this word till today when one of the Bundy's wives found out about it, and she was talking to her husband, and she found out that even he and all of the rest of the patriots had been molested by this female guard. And so another battle flag has gone up now. The wives are taking the matter to the courts. So that was kind of a rousing day in Nevada today. And in Portland, they also had
Before you go to Portland, let's just stick there for a minute. Is there any way to get any information on any paperwork that they might have filed concerning these charges? Is there any way to get the wives to write as next friend affidavits on their behalf, or anybody. It doesn't have to be a wife. It could be anybody who has knowledge, first-hand knowledge through the people who have been abused. If you got anybody who's got first-hand knowledge from those people can be the next friend. Also, do we have someone that could be a next friend to do a habeas corpus? Because we've never done a habeas corpus for the Bundy Ranch issue. And so do we have anybody out there to get that paperwork together?
Well, I just found out about it just before time for the call this afternoon. So I haven't had a chance to look into that yet, but
see what you can do in that.
I want to contact them and see.
We can bring the papers to
them and see what they would like to do and stuff, if we can help them there. But I just learned about that.
Okay.
And in Portland, there was a status hearing today. It seemed of the seven defendants, they've offered four of them a plea deal. And today they were talking about that, and I haven't got all the word on that yet either. I know one of them has accepted it, and it's quite possible that two or three, maybe even all four of them accepted it. But what the plea deal is they told him you plead guilty to a misdemeanor charge, you'll get 1 year probation, a $1,000 fine, and all the other charges go away. And I think probably if they accepted it, they didn't get any good legal counseling, because I think, you know, here a while back they were talking about, yeah, we'll have a misdemeanor charges, but we'll use that to take away their guns. So in other words, applying criminal statutes to a civil charge. And so I got a feeling that if these people accepted the plea deal, what they don't realize yet is they're going to be made to turn in their guns and their ammo. And so that's a concern.
Are there only seven people that are being charged out there in Nevada?
No,
this
is
seven people you're talking about in Oregon. This is the last seven.
Yeah, in Oregon.
Okay.
It's a,
how many people are charged in Nevada, do we know?
It's right around the same. Well, I don't know, because they've set up three separate trials.
Hmm.
So
yeah, because they arrested like 60 people, didn't they, originally, including Sean and all them. They haven't seen their day in court, right?
They've got about seven of the Patriots that we've been watching real close. I don't know how many more they might have. But the good news is last Monday night when I asked for a volunteer to help me with the courts here, before I even stopped talking, I had a volunteer send me a message. I want to say thank you, Canvas. He's one of our members. And but the trial here in Portland starts on the 14th. That'll be the start. You know, they'll start their jury selection on the 14th. And so now there's been so much going on. It's got all these supporters and everything, and they're all screaming about different things. It's just a lot, so much going on, and it's a lot of it just, I don't know, they're causing friction between the supporters and the defendants with some of the stuff that's going on. But it seems like they're really gonna push hard here in Portland to shut up the supporters outside the courthouse. And so
okay. And
by the way, on a misdemeanor charge, you don't lose your, well, I don't know. They said a year unsupervised probation. Now, they may lose their guns during that probation, but you don't lose your gun rights or your voting rights or anything like that.
Well, I know that.
But during probation, you might lose it. And if they come and get your guns, you know, they take your guns. And then you play hell getting them back. But technically,
well, the thing is, though, when a judge made the decision to add on these other misdemeanor charges, and she said that there would not be a jury present for the misdemeanor charges, that she would make the ruling on it. She also said that that if she finds them guilty, they'll also be made to turn in their guns and their ammunition.
And this is the same judge?
Yeah, Judge Anna Brown.
Okay.
Now, in Nevada, one other thing good that happened the other day is they dismissed the gun charges. Just like they had done here in Portland.
So that means they're rolling over already.
Yeah.
Well, there was no way that they can even make that stick. I mean, what are they going to say they did with their guns? They carried them around? It's legal to carry them around out there anyway.
Well, here's the thing, too, is there was an investigation done on a special agent in charge of the BLM who was at the Bundy Ranch, and it turns out he was the same one that was in Malheur County in Oregon, and they found him guilty of I'm not sure what it was, except for the fact that he had tried to cover up his wrongdoings. He was threatening witnesses and everything, and trying to cover up his wrongdoings, and so he's the same one that that was breaking the rules on the Bundy Ranch. He's the same special agent that was in Oregon, and so I'm waiting to hear what's going to come up over that. But it seems to me that his breaking the rules would be a good reason for dismissal of charges.
Okay. Thanks, Robert. Let me make a suggestion. Can't they at this point give their guns to someone else? Give up their ownership to friends, family, or somebody at this point in time? And then get them back when they know it's safe to get them back once they get out.
Well, I don't know all the legalities in every state about that.
Yeah, you could do that.
I suppose they could do that at the moment.
Well, first of all, if it's a, they don't have pistol permits out there, so it's very much easier than it is in New York. In New York, you have concealed carry, and you'd have to turn them to somebody else who has a concealed carry, or you can turn them into an FFL, and he can hold them for you until that such time that that's over. And they try to get involved in it. Sometimes the judges, will say, yes, you can, or no, you can't. But really, especially if it's somebody who's family, you absolutely can do that, But they'll want to do that pretty quickly, I think. I don't think you want to wait while they're coming down the driveway, And like you said, they need to do that now.
Here in Oregon, a couple of years ago, they passed a law that said that you sell your gun, you have to do a background check and everything on the person you sold it to and charge that fee and everything. So in other words, what I'm saying is there would be a record, and if the courts found out about it,
selling it and giving it to someone are two different things, number one. And if there is no ultimate record of someone having a gun, then they can just give it away. They don't have guns. And where, worst case, they can say, well, I gave it away, there's no requirement if you give it away, is there?
They're actually allowed to sell them, too. Those are their property. And all they got to do is have an FFL hold them until the sale. Otherwise, it's thievery. It's their property. They can give them away or sell
them. Yeah, but
they
do what
they
want. I mean, there's a lot of arguments that could be made here.
Well, I know people who have done it. I know people that got DWIs and they had to get rid of their gun because of the DWI, because of, you know what I mean? And they let them, in New York, they let them sell them. I know that for a fact. But you got to document what you're doing and where they went and who got them and all that baloney.
Well, I know here in Oregon, we have refused to follow that law. And we even had a civil disobedience thing at the state house, you know, at the Capitol building. And we even had sheriffs say we will not follow that law.
Hey, where was that protest at? Civil disobedience on exactly what you're talking about, Robert, and they went out with their guns. They wanted them to register transfers, and they were there with their rifles on their back. It was legal open carry, and at the right time, everybody switched guns. So that was the transfer.
That was here in Oregon. That was here in Oregon, and also in the state of Washington done it.
Yeah, I saw that on a YouTube. It was pretty good. They're handing each other, everybody was handing each other the other guy's gone, you know?
Yep.
I'm sorry,
John. Well, look at these cases that we have going, one in Montana, we got the Oregon case, we got the Nevada case, those three states. Look at people out in that are membership, people out in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Montana, Wyoming, and even California, depending on where you're located. Let's get involved in these cases. We need people digging and getting information and getting the necessary sworn affidavits. And, of course, definitely we need to contact the people close to the people in this case and get a next friend so we can do habeas corpus on the Nevada case. We've already did habeas corpus in the Oregon case, and we're about ready to move that into our case. But we do need something on the Bundy Ranch case in Nevada. And we've already done habeas corpus in Montana. People need to get involved with our committee to help us to investigate and research the information necessary in order to bring the documentations into the court. So, come on, let's get busy out there, and let's get these people out of jail, and let's help to save these people. Anything else, Robert?
Well, there's another thought too that I should bring up. Is I told you that that Ryan Bundy had a hearing, a release hearing, pending trial. Well, I was just reminded a couple of days ago that Ryan Bundy still has a charge pending here in Oregon, and I'm thinking that if the judge okays his release pending trial, the what do they call them? Not sheriff, but the marshals. I think they'll snatch him right back up and just haul him to Oregon. I don't think he'll see any time off.
All right, well, we'll do the best we can from our end, but we can only do as much as people will help us to do. So if people don't help, we're not going to get done. So we got to get it done here, you know?
Well,
this is not a one-man operation. We need teams of people working with us. So let's
get a hold
of Jan and give him your name, and let's get into the game here. So, okay.
Yeah, we need all the help we can get.
Absolutely. Okay, Jan, did you say Ollie had something to report?
Yes, I think he did, if you see him on the panel there. He had some comments about Sheriff Mack and Chris Ann Hall, I believe.
Okay, I'm looking for him.
He's, I see him here.
Where is he?
He's muted.
Yeah, but I don't know where he's at.
While you're doing that, the other thing is the pretrial hearing for Ryan, and I don't want to steal Ollie's thunder. I know he wanted to talk about Chris Ann Hall and Sheriff Mack, but what we didn't mention was the fact that That tape we got, John, with Ryan on it for all day on the pretrial hearing, they mm-hmm. went through every last bit of what they have on him in Nevada, and Ryan rebutted every last bit of it. He opened the court case with a prayer, and he also swore himself in, and he also made it known that the prosecutor needs to swear in before he can testify. Got the judge to agree to that. And they went through, and he rebutted every last piece of evidence that they, so they went through the trial in the pretrial release hearing. And I don't know, I don't know that that's a good idea for the prosecution, but nevertheless, it's all on that tape that we got that we're going to try to break up and release, because it's very long, it's all day. It's, you know, we'll probably have to break it up into 8 different sections or something. And it's very, very good. And it's highly unusual. You'd never see this. And basically, I think it blew the case out of the water, because once that thing hits social media, that tape and those sections, they went through their whole trial with Ryan. And Ryan brought everything out and rebutted everything they said, read from the Constitution, by the way, which they would have none of.
And this is the same Judge Brown in this?
No. This is the Nevada judge.
Oh, okay.
This is Nevada judge. I think they're done down there. I mean, unless they thought that he was going to hang himself, you know, maybe they were hoping he'd stick his foot in his mouth. But they
with what we're hearing right now, we have to get a habeas corpus down there for the Bundys at this point. That's more pressure on this, and we're going to copy the president on this one as an information concerning injustice and the fact that these judges, you know, are not the courts of law, not courts of law anymore, you know. But anyway, we have to get next friend down there.
Look at this testimony that he gave. Is highly powerful, John. It is really good. You got to listen to it. I would like to take snippets of it. We should put it everywhere, because once it gets out there, it lays the whole case out. The prosecutor gave all the evidence he had, and Ryan rebutted it masterfully. The case is over, as far as I'm concerned. They're done, and it's going to be. The first thing is if we can get this out in the public. It's going to the court of public opinion will have already ruled on it. You know, I don't know how they could even have a trial after this testimony. You know, they laid the whole thing out and he answered it all. This was a pretrial release hearing, and the prosecutor went through each and every part of the other thing was they tried to block his, he had a subpoena out for 3 sheriffs because they lied about what happened there. And the marshals refused to serve the subpoena, and they served it the day before the trial. And he only got 1 sheriff that he subpoenaed to testify. And it was the sheriff that Ryan rode in the car with when he got there. And the sheriff testified that the protesters were on one side, the local police were in the middle, and the BLM were on the other side, and that no crimes were committed. They are done. He has a sheriff testifying that he saw no crimes committed. There was no assault taking place. Their case is done.
Mm. Yep.
It's
okay. Well, let's pour on top of it.
Yeah,
okay.
So,
let's.
One thing, John, that I'm thinking. You said you were going to send some papers to Trump. You know, I'm thinking maybe it's time that we send him a copy of the Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. He may know about them, but...
Yeah, well, we should put something together maybe. But one of the key things, you know, one of our focus, and I was going to do something on this next information. I want to copy him on what we're doing in all these cases. But you know what? I realized that we only want to focus in on a couple of things. The main thing we want to focus in on, and this is our spearhead, is the corruption in the court. the lack of the use of the Constitution. These people are in jurisdictions unknown. They have puppet grand juries, puppet trial juries. They refuse to hear the Constitution in the court. They refuse to hear the Bible being brought up into the court. They refuse to swear in the witnesses properly. They you know, it just goes on and on and on. And this is where we really got to focus in. These are big issues on the Agenda 21 and all the other things, absolutely.
I agree on what you say there. It's just that right now he's having arguments with the UN, and it might be a prime time to hit him with it, just to make sure he has that information.
If we can get people to work with us to get gather together the necessary documentation concerning Agenda 21. You know, if someone's interested in this, let's get some volunteers into our committee. Get a hold of Jan. Go to our directory, nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on the directory on the top blue bar. Find Jan's number. Give him a call. Say, put my name on the list. I want to be involved in getting research and getting documentation concerning Agenda 21.
Go to Google. Go to Google, and they can just copy both of them.
It's more than just copying. We have to have certified information, and we're meeting in order to discuss what exactly is that.
It's a UN. It's a UN website.
I understand that, but you need someone to go do it. You need someone to pull the documentation down. They need to read through it and say, okay, these are documents that will really help to build our case. We've even got two editors that we've got working on this to gather the information, to put it even in a more stronger hold, and also to make sure that we do have good documentation, and that we're not going in there looking like a bunch of jerks with something that's not true. We can't afford to do that.
You didn't mention Agenda 21 and 2030 in the case, John. That wasn't
in
our case.
We did mention 21, I believe, early on. I don't remember.
Yeah, because there's some very big national groups that have been fighting this that I am sure are on his doorstep right now. And there's that little guy we had coming to the tea parties that did an excellent job. It has all kinds of documentation. So if we need it, we can get stuff that's already done. That I don't know if you went to the meeting, John, where the guy gave the whole 45 minutes on Agenda 21, how they do it, what they do, how they change the name, where it came from, and he went in and got their like Robert says, he went into their website, pulled their stuff, and then had people like Griffin comment on it. He had all of that. He's got I forget the name of it. It's a blue book. It's a blue binder, and it has
all right, well,
and
let's see if we can get someone to gather the information on it. You know, look at some of these people. Some of these people have already done the research.
I'll bet you dollars to donut Trump has it already, but we can't assume.
If you got people who've done the research, and let's get people who go out there and find the people who've done the research and get a copy of their research in order to do what we have to do with it. But whatever, look, it gets down to this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people can only do so much. We got so much going on, but a small group of people can't do it all. We need volunteers. If people are interested in saving this country, they're going to put their time into it. So let's put your time into it. Because right now, we have a lot of people that are not putting the time into it. And again, you don't have to, put in time every day. Even if it's only an hour or two a week, even that will help. Okay? So let's get some volunteering time into this process. Let's do what we have to do here. Okay, let's move on. I can't find Ollie. Have you found Ollie, Jen?
I've got him here.
Can you unmute him?
Unmute him. I just unmuted him. Ollie, you there?
Hello.
Good, Ollie. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Okay. Yes, what happened, it was either Kansas or Nebraska. Last year, they passed a gun law to where the feds could not come in and enforce any of their federal gun laws. And the governor signed it and the whole bid made a big to-do about it. Okay. And lo and behold, the farm kid says, okay, now I can do this. And then the feds come in and busted him. Okay, now all of us are concerned with, you know, Nevada, Oregon, and Colorado and whatnot. So I did. There was nothing much on the social media about it, and I sort of forgot about it. Day before yesterday, I think, I'm friends with Chris Ann Hall on Facebook. Well, all of a sudden, she has never gone live, okay? All of a sudden, she's live streaming. And what's this? So I go on there, and she's with this rally outside that courthouse in Kansas, okay? And your first hearing, your arraignment or whatever. You know, I'm not sure what it was all about. But she's there, and all of a sudden Sheriff Max down there, and Sheriff Max goes, "What are you doing here?" "Well, we just came here." "What are you doing here?" "Well, I just came here. I'm on my way to D.C. So they gave a speech and all this and that, and Sheriff Max gave a speech, and he holds up this letter, and he says, "When I leave here, I'm going to D.C. I'm going to present this letter to Congress and Trump's staff." What it is, it's another one of those letters, you know, pardon the Hammonds, and he had a few Bundys on there and a few others, and somebody in the crowd said, "Is Joe Roberts' name on there?" And he said, "Well, those names will be added later." Okay. But, you know, Trump knows what's going on. And I think that his pardons for all P3s are in the works, but I think the big holdup is this. You know, let's say they pardon Joe Robertson. That's good for Joe Robertson. That one of our missions is done. However, that's not going to solve the problem. We still got the problem with the EPA and the land grab issues and all this and that. I think Trump is investigating. And he's wanting names. It's just like the assassination of Lavoie Finicum. He wants names. So when he moves, he's got all he needs, and he's going to nail him. And what the big holdup is this, and it's been held up for 2 weeks now. Sessions. He needs Sessions as Attorney General, so he can turn him loose. Because Sessions was Attorney General. He can investigate anything, anybody, and everything from coast to coast. Yeah, he will have full power to investigate, and that's what Trump needs. And then the D.C., the old cronies and all this in D.C., they're delaying it and delaying it and delaying it. I think they're trying to cover up, delay the inevitable, and covering up and trying to cover their tracks. But... I've told everybody for weeks now the key element, the last key of the puzzle, is Sessions as Attorney General. And when he gets in, a lot of stuff is going to happen, okay? But as far as Joe Robertson's concerned, we're sort of in a holding pattern, just in that same mode. You know, we have fought them for something like 8 months now. We gain 3 yards and we lose 2.5 yards. And we've made a little progress. We've got pressure on the warden. We're getting legal mail in and out that's not being tampered, not being opened. We've made very little progress. Joe is still under that 120-day no phone calls out, no commissary. They are still... still harassing him, and we had been leery all during these 8 months. If we do something, are they going to take it out on Joe? That's what they were doing at the start, okay? But we're in that waiting mode too. I would like to see when Sessions gets in. He needs to investigate the prison abuse. He needs to investigate the slave labor in these prisons, and I see it coming, and I think it's on the horizon. The prison investigation might be, you know, a few months down the road, but I'd really look for Trump to start pardoning the P3s. That's about all I got.
Okay, thank you, Ali. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to go over to Brent. Brent's going to be talking. I'm not sure what Brent's going to be talking about. He may be still finishing up on the militia, but in any event, Brent is author of The Excellence in the Common Law. He's a common law lawyer, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you here? Go right ahead.
I'm here, and I
we can appreciate hear you.
Good. I appreciate the comments of these fellows that are keeping up with the men in prison, because when the fellow's in prison, in most cases, the world stops for him, and he is forgotten. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I want to know about it. I'd like to, of course, you mentioned also that recording of the court hearing. Gerard, I'm hoping you can put that up someplace where I can listen to it, too. Apparently, you've got plans to do that.
Yeah, Brent, well, I'll send you. Yeah, it's a big, long thing, and it takes a special player to play it. This is the problem, because it has five mics being taped at the same time. See, what they do in court now, they give the judge a mic, they give the prosecutor a mic, they give the defendant a mic. And this particular recorder, you can shut any one of them off, or all of them except one, so you can hear very well. So, I'll give you the information. Download the player. Uh-huh. It's a free player. And you can listen to it. It's very clear, and you will enjoy it. And I'll get a hold of you after this is over and give you the information to download that, because you should listen to it.
Thanks, Gerard. Appreciate it. And, of course, appreciate a little time to talk about the militia. Justice Story said that the militia of the several states, he said of it in his commentaries on the Constitution of the United States, written about 39 years after its ratification, after a shakedown period, as the sailors like to say, he wrote a commentary about it. Very instructive. I would recommend it to anybody. You can get that commentary in abridged form. Excuse me just a minute. Had a frog in my throat. You can get that in the abridged form, and it's pretty complete in the abridged form. One volume, easy reading. You can look things up. With great vigor, recommend it to everybody. That's called Justice Joseph Story, Commentaries on the Constitution. The abridged version is one volume. It's easy to use as a reference. You can have it on your desk. You grab it quick, open it up, find what you're looking for, see what he has to say about it. And Justice Story was a champion of which no American has ever been equal. A champion of our common law. He believed in it, and he lived at a time when there was a political push in the United States to get rid of everything English, everything. There was an animus toward everything English and the common law. There was an organized force to get rid of it. It went up for votes in many states. It missed. The common law was to be thrown out of the state of Kentucky. It missed by one vote, due to the efforts of men like Henry Clay. And then it went up for a vote to get rid of our common law in the state of Missouri. The state legislator there didn't get rid of it by one vote. It's hard for us to imagine in this day, after the War of 1812, how much Americans hated the English. And some of it came from President Andy Jackson, who hated the British, all of them, more than anything in the world. And if there's anything that drove him to do what he did, it was his hatred of the British, because I believe he was the last president that had fought in the Revolution. He was only 14 years old. He was taken prisoner with his brothers, and he was ordered by a stupid British officer to shine his boots. And when he refused, this stupid British officer pulled out his saber and swung it at him, and Andy Jackson threw his arm up. He was just a boy, and it hit him in the arm and slashed him across the face, and he had a scar. And because of that one stupid man, dead, or about 1,200 dead British soldiers in New Orleans. I don't say that as a matter of just opinion. I've read the story about his life, and it's clear. He, like George Washington, same thing. George Washington hated the English. And the reason he hated the English is because they would not give him the same respect as an officer in the British Army that the other officers got. They kept him on a lower rung because he was nothing more than a colonial. He never got over that. And see what it did. You don't mistreat people. Now, I'm Jackson and him both, because of what the British did to them. And then Jackson, there's a lot of other incidents in his life like that, running the British out of Florida, and then, of course, New Orleans, and then his run for the presidency. We don't mistreat men when we have them prisoners. That's the point I'm making here. Folk don't realize how little things, none of us do. I don't think we stop to consider how little things and disobedience to the laws of God can destroy entire nations and men and cause death and murder. And we don't want that. We want to honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king. And the first principle of it anyway, of that, what Peter says, the apostle, we want to honor all men. We know that for sure. The king part, that takes some explanation, but we do know that we are not to disrespect men, no matter who they are, even if we have to kill them. We don't belittle them, and we don't disrespect them. Well, that's just a side note. How that came up, I'm not sure, but it did come to mind. Oh, we're talking about the commentaries on the Constitution. What a beautiful set of books. And it was written, of course, at a time that was closer to the fountain, closer to the founders. He knew them. He knew the men. He lived during the days of Jefferson, Madison, and Adams. He lived beyond them. He was younger, of course, but he really had a handle on things, and he wanted to understand our Constitution in terms of our common law, and he did. And he was concerned, above all things, that as Americans tramped across the wilderness, that the law of the city didn't take over, but that the common law arrived first. Well, let me pull up this militia statute. This is an expression of our common law. At the end of the book here, the book, called The Militia of the Several States, our Constitution's Answers to Its Enemies, Foreign and Domestic. At the end of that book, I have a model militia statute. And as I go over it now, I was just reading some of it a minute ago, I made some changes. The next time it's printed, it'll be, I think, a little tighter even. But this militia statute is a model. I recommend it to state legislators. It's what our Constitution requires, that they do something. And Story said, my great fear is that these militia clauses of our Constitution, these four clauses, will be forgotten. They'll be ignored, and then they'll slip out of use. And he says, if that happens, we have lost not only the reality that brings and keeps our freedom, but the politium, he said. Both the politium and the reality of our freedom. The politium is the sign, the mark, the betokening thing of our freedom. And the fact, he says, that Americans are armed is the great token of our freedom because, let's face it, friends, neighbors, and relatives, that's not the way it is in the rest of the world. Never has been. Men were forbidden from being armed. And still are, all over the world. And America stands out. If there's anything that distinguishes us, it is that Americans, the people of the United States, the states united, have remained armed throughout our history. Although the onslaught against it is greater than it's ever been. But this is a teaching and is part of our common law. And if we push the idea and keep it in the forefront that this is our common law and that our Constitution is not understandable without the common law, our common law, then all this foolish talk in our courts and outside of our courts will go away. Courts saying things like the common law no longer applies. You hear people talking about Erie versus Tompkins, Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, and cases like that. And the state of Utah legislature passed a legislation saying the common law is no longer enforced in Utah. That's just silly talk. If the common law is no longer enforced in Utah, then the jury is no longer in use in Utah. I don't think they go that far. Just a lot of foolishness. There's a lot of foolish talk out there, a lot of ignorant talk. by men in positions of great power, like the legislators out in Utah, like the judges on the federal bench, talking about things they don't have a clue, this whole situation with immigration. Let me get back to the militia statute. I'm going to go through it here. I started in on it. I got paragraph 3 under the heading Becoming Available for Militia Duty. Here's the way it reads. Any man fulfilling the requirements of paragraph 1 above, that talks about being a member, may present himself as available for militia duty by reporting to the supervisor of the township wherein he resides at the place and during the times said supervisor designates. Now, the reason I put this in here is because I think the best way to model the militia is locally, of course. And that's the way it's always been back during the time of Alfred the Great. By the way, the English don't very often call anybody great. They're pretty reserved in their emotions and opinions. And to call a man great is quite an accolade for a man. And Alfred deserves it. He was a sinner, and he admitted it, but he did a lot of things. But one thing that he did do, the Anglo-Saxons, he was there before the Danes arrived, and the Vikings. The Danes are the Vikings. The other people in the Scandinavian countries were just as nasty, just as bloody. But they weren't called Vikings. The Danes were the Vikings. They invaded England, and they intended to stay, and they came in massive waves of thousands of men, and then the women, and the children, and they did stay. And they mixed their blood with the angels and the Saxons, and it's been mixed ever since. And their invasion re-established our common law, frankly, because the Romanization, the imprint of Rome, had been strong during the Roman legions' stay there back during the first four centuries after the birth of Christ. So the Danes, even though it was hard, and Alfred fought them, it helped reestablish our common law. But Alfred was the one that wanted to mix with them. They were Christianized. They converted to Christianity in a prisoner exchange program between the Anglo-Saxons, King Alfred, and the king of the Danes, the commander that was there. And through that exchange, the commander of the Danes decided to become a Christian because he said that, well, the God of Alfred and the Anglos and the Saxons must be greater than our God because our God did not win the battle for us here. And he converted the Danes. In England have been Christian, at least in name now, I suppose, ever since. But it did make a big difference for them. But Alfred had organized the militia according to the common law, and he did it according to township. And you say, well, did they really have townships back then? Yes, they did. They called them hundreds. Hundreds. That means 100, an area of land that embraced 100 militia members, approximately. So they called them hundreds. And they had a court in the hundred. And the hundreds became, they were a division of the shire. The shire, after the Norman invasion, was called the county. There's the Roman Latin influence. The county. And the hundreds were called townships, because they usually had a town in them. But even in America, that's not always true with the townships. But the militia was organized according to townships and the hundred had a court. And by the way, the hundreds, in an attempt, when people came to America, they wanted to reestablish our common law and its purity, or at least closer to it. And they realized that the imprint of Rome was there, and it was causing all sorts of problems. That's why they came to America. So the people in Pennsylvania, the people in New Jersey, by the way, New Jersey still has hundreds, I think. I'm not from there, and I've never been there. I just read books. Pennsylvania no longer has it, I don't think, but New Jersey does. And they were an important political division in New Jersey until the Supreme Court came down and tried to control what they said was gerrymandering, not that many decades ago, one man, one vote doctrine and all that. I don't think the hundreds have the same political influence they used to. But going on that idea that of Alfred's, it was a good idea. It worked very well. I don't know why it wouldn't work now. Government is local. The more local, the better. The more local, the more freedom. And as far as juror entities, that means political divisions, as our courts say, juridical entities. The township is about as low as you can go. Low, well, there is a precinct, I suppose, below that. But even in England, and the glory of England's common law, as it was in its more pure form, as it came from the continent, as it really came from what is now Denmark, Jutland, and over in that area, the strength of it, says William Blackstone, is that it brought the court to the door of every cottier. That means every fellow that lived in a cottage, every, no matter how humble, the court wasn't far away. It was right there in the township. And so you can get justice. You have a fight with your neighbor, you can settle it. You don't have to stand out in the road and try to beat each other up with quarterstaffs or cudgels of some kind. You can go to court. And there was peace in those days. Trial by battle was done away with during that time, at least. People said that there was peace throughout in those days, England. The knife of the cutthroat was blunted. I'm quoting the historian of the day that wrote not many centuries after that. And order of law reigned, not order of tyranny, order of law. Well, the militia should be organized at the local level. As the supervisor, the township supervisor designates a mustering, any man reporting to enroll himself on the militia, paragraph 4, shall then provide in writing to the township supervisor his name, his address, where he lives, and other contact information in order to enable quick response to summons. Any personal skill useful for militia duty, by the way, that would take in just about everything a fellow men do, and his signature of acceptance that he will be placed upon his township's role of this state's militia. I'm reading from a model militia statute, so I say this state's militia. Paragraph 5. Each militiaman of this state, whether officer or non-officer, we used to say officer or men, I always thought that was humorous, still do, because there's a difference between men and officers. But we say here officer or non-officer, every militiaman, upon being enrolled, shall say the following under his oath or upon his oath and solemn affirmation. And here's the oath. I will support and defend the Constitution of this state and of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and upon being duly called and mustered into actual service of this state, will obey all lawful orders of the governor of this state and of the officers placed over me, stressing the word lawful here. That's the oath that military men do take in the U.S. still. Lawful orders. And upon being duly called and mustered into actual service of the United States, that'd be a little different, will obey all lawful orders of the President and of the officers placed over me. Now, I point out here, this is an oath to defend the law of the land against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And again, I say this, I think I've said it before on these calls, that is an ancient oath, and it delineates the two duties of militiamen. The two duties are armed defense against foreign enemies and jury duty domestically. And when a fellow takes that oath, as did Mike Pence recently, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, he falls in the same category as you and I. That's why he referenced these two things, foreign and domestic, because that references his two duties. As a potential member of the militia, he has a duty to serve on the jury, and he has a duty to armed defense. Now, if you notice, the president's oath did not say foreign and domestic when Trump took his oath. His oath is different. And if something happened, God forbid, but something happened to the president, and he was no longer able, for some reason, to fulfill his office, Mike Pence would have to take the oath that Trump took. It's a different oath. And the reason it does not include these two phrases, against enemies, foreign and domestic, it does include support the Constitution with all his being, but it doesn't include these because as president, he is not a member, rank and file, of the militia of the several states. He's not the one who's called out. He's the one that does the calling, as the governors of the states do the calling. So he's in a different position. And by the way, at common law, anciently, even during the days before the Norman invasion, the commander-in-chief, it's an old common law phrase, the king was called the king, the kayin. That's a word, by the way, that comes from kin, K-I-N. That means relatives, kith and kin. And that's why we have the requirement of our president, because he's commander-in-chief, that's a common law doctrine, came down to us, he must be natural born. He must be one of us, kith and kin. And by the way, that standard also the Bible upholds for the militiamen and for the rulers. Or the rulers, that's not a good word, for the headmen, I call them, the preeminent men, given the duties of government, according to the Bible, Deuteronomy, they're to be one of us, kith and kin. Because if they aren't, their loyalty is questionable at best. And rightly so, I suppose, in this sense, your loyalty lies where your parents are from. Your loyalty lies where your home is. Your loyalty lies with the land. And it is the distinctive of our common law that it attaches everything about it. Its fundamental doctrines attach to the land. The land. And that means they attach to the law of the land. Hence, it is no accident that we take an oath to the law of the land. Our Constitution declares itself to be the law of the land. And that's the old word for our common law. So that's why we have this oath. And by the way, the commander-in-chief, once he was voted by the elders at their advice and consent to take extraordinary powers in military action, during that time he was immune from legal process. You couldn't serve papers on him. You couldn't summons him into court. And that's again why he takes a different oath than us. But in no event shall any other oath be required, the statute I'm reading, the model militia statute, in no other event shall any other oath be required of any militiaman of this state. Paragraph 6, by his signature and his oath, the militiaman shall accept the responsibilities of militia duty according to the limitations of the U.S. Constitution and its lawful delegations. And that means especially the four militia clauses of our Constitution. Paragraph 7, each militiaman, upon having been sworn into this state's militia, shall within 1 year purchase at his own expense or otherwise lawfully acquire the weapon and 500 rounds of ammunition this state's legislature has specified and required, and within 2 years of enrollment as a militiaman shall provide proof that he has, at his own expense, disciplined himself to safe handling of, care of, and marksmanship with said firearm, which meets this state's legislature's standards. It would be important for young men to look forward to that responsibility. I grew up once, and I remember that growing up wasn't always pleasant. And what a fellow wants to be when he's grown up is a man. If he doesn't, there's something wrong with him. And it's sad in our own day that boys don't have a rite of passage into manhood that they can clearly identify. Oh, I suppose there's some left around. Military service is still available. Sometimes it's looked at that way. Some people play football in high school. There are other things that boys do, locally, even in their own families, that serve as a rite of passage. There is not, Donald Trump went through this, there is not what we used to call catechism. He went through catechism as a Presbyterian through the Westminster Confession of Faith. Things like that are important. But I dare say most young men, you know, most young boys will never realize their manhood. They may become men, they may function as men, But men, different than the female of our species, need a rite of passage. It's just the way things are. And how much good would it do us? A lot of good. If men look forward, although they'd probably complain about it, that's part of being a man too, I suppose, but look forward to saying, I've got to figure out how I'm going to get my hands on this rifle. I've got to get a job. I've got to make some money. And then it will also bring a camaraderie and a continuity between the old men and the young men, because everybody would have that common experience, you see. Even if they aren't able really to bear a weapon in battle, they can contribute. As that movie that came out recently, a fellow refused to carry a gun. He was a Seventh-day Adventist, Medal of Honor winner, gone now. Hacksaw Ridge, I haven't seen the movie, but I knew about the fella before the movie. I didn't know as much as I wanted to. Fascinating story. But there's still a rite of passage, and everyone can participate. If they don't participate in that, they can participate in jury duty. That's the second duty of the militiaman. Paragraph 8. Any federal law, regulation, executive order, act, or action infringing upon the right of any individual of this state to keep and bear arms, or upon any other constitutional duty or responsibility rationally related to militia duty under our U.S. Constitution, shall have no force or effect over the members of this state's militia. Who would that include? Every man. The people. Every man. Regardless of whether any member in question is enrolled upon the militia rolls of this state. I put that in there because the militia is. It's not something that has to be organized. We are the militia. We are the people. The people means the militia. The ancient name of our common law is Volkreich. Volkreich. That's the Germanic speech. That's the way of saying Volk is folk. That means people, the people. Folk, F-O-L-K. We pronounce our F. They pronounce a V. Still do, by the way, in the Volkswagen. Is the people's wagon. The Volkreich is the people's duty, the people's right, the people's responsibility. And that word Reich in Germanic speech means duty, means responsibility, it means scope of jurisdiction, a responsibility to act respecting a given matter, whether by action or forbearance. That's what jurisdiction is. That's what Reich means. The Volkreich. The people's duty. It is our duty of government. And what is our duty of government? Well, it's armed defense, fundamentally, more fundamentally than any other thing. It's armed defense and jury duty. And that falls on us. That doesn't fall on these fellows that get government jobs and government offices. That's not where government is. Government's right here. Jury duty, grand jury, petit jury, and armed defense. Peace. The peace. And at common law, every man has his peace. The king has his peace. The country has its peace. And in those days, our common law understands, should still understand, peace means, as it means in the Bible, shalom. It doesn't mean the absence of warfare. It does not mean the absence of adversity. It does not mean the absence of hostility. In fact, our common law is adversity. Without adversity, there is no common law. It is an adversarial tradition in contrast to the law of the city, which is inquisitorial. You don't fight in that system. You just do what the government says. If you don't give them what they want, they torture you. That's the way their tribunals work. No, I'm not exaggerating. Go to South America. Hope you don't get arrested. I keep saying that. I've met people that have been arrested down there. And sometimes in France and Italy and other places, it's just as bad. And if they don't do those things to you, they have the lawful power to. It's not America. We, the government, rest upon the shoulders, the shoulders of the people. We, the people of the United States, and the people, of course, are the ratifiers of our Constitution. The Constitution is a product of them. Therefore, the Constitution is their baby. They have the power to amend it. Our Constitution is a creature of the people, not a creature of government. Not even a creature of the founders. Never forget, the founders, we call them the founding fathers, those fellows were parroting what they knew people wanted. That's the way people in public power and public sway always do. It was the public sway, our common law control. They didn't give us anything. We did it ourselves. The people of the United States ratified the Constitution. And those that wanted it ratified, those fellows that were in the convention, they labored hard to persuade people, because we are the court of last resort, the people. We are the jury members. We are the ones that must be persuaded. And if we're not persuaded, it's not going to work. Not for the ones in power. By the way, we're the ones that are armed. Keep that in mind, too. And we're the ones that serve on the jury, as I said a while ago. Paragraph 9. Qualification of militiamen and officers. In no event shall any man be eligible to serve as a militiaman or as a militia officer of this state who holds citizenship of any country other than the United States, owes or otherwise bears allegiance to any other sovereign on earth besides allegiance to the Constitution of this state and the Constitution of the United States. Now, I recognize also that as a matter of the common senses, it's impossible to be a citizen of the United States without first being a citizen of one of the several states of our union. But it's important to know also that we bear faith and allegiance. When we bear faith and allegiance to our Constitution, we bear faith and allegiance to a unified tradition, a unified order. Our courts have said this over and over again. For instance, it is true that states enjoy what we call sovereignty, and the federal government enjoys a sovereignty. And those two sovereignties are separate. They're separate. But our courts, federal and state, are one order, one, the order of our common law. And federalism, what we call federalism, it's an unhappy name, but that governs the relationship between the federal courts, the states, and the general government, as our forebears called it. They didn't call it the federal government. That sounded too Romanesque to them. They called it the general government. The general government, because its jurisdiction was incredibly limited, but it had absolute control within the boundaries of that limited jurisdiction. That's true. By the way, you have in your jurisdiction whatever God has given you, and you can define that as your fundamental rights, given direct to you from God. You have unlimited jurisdiction within your bailiwick, within it. That's why, for example, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Militia Clause, says that this right to self-protection, the right to keep and bear arms, that's the way we apply it, the first principle in our own world, it shall not be infringed. It shall not be chewed upon around the edges. It shall not be scorched on the edges. It shall not be trespassed. That means that you have absolute plenary, full right to act within the scope of that Second Amendment. Well, the truth is, you had the right to act before the Second Amendment came along, because the Second Amendment is the only one of the four militia clauses that grants no jurisdiction. The other three grant jurisdiction to the president, to the governors of the states, to the state legislature, to the Congress of the United States. But the fourth militia clause grants nothing. It guarantees the protection of a right that God granted to the individual. Well, we left off, we'll pick up last night time. Now, Lord willing, we'll pick up on paragraph 10. So, that's all I have for this evening. Thanks. Well, when nobody
Gerard, are you muted out there or what? Yeah, well, Gerard was taking the board over. Maybe he's muted. Okay. Didn't realize.
When nobody responds, then I wonder, have I been talking to myself for 30 minutes? But apparently I haven't. That's good. Maybe I muted myself.
I'll move it over. Yeah, I've done that plenty of times. So mm-hmm. I'll move it over to Q&A and maybe he's... Okay, if anybody has any questions or comments for Brent or any of us, star 6 to get into the queue. And we see a couple people in. Let's go to Eric. First question. Go right ahead, Eric.
Brent, a question, but before I get to my main question, if you could, you had mentioned a few things. John was talking about how the sheriff is not actually in the Constitution, but it's part of the common law. It's a fixture of the common law. And you had mentioned that the balance of powers was not in the Constitution, but we understand it as our heritage. And then you, I think you named one or two other things. Can you think of them off the top of your head, those other one or two things?
No, I can't right off the top of my head because I don't know exactly. Well, I don't know what you're thinking, I suppose. I recognize the things you said I've probably said in the past. I can say that our Constitution is not, it's not complete. It does not speak to everything. It is a brief. It is, as the, our Supreme Court uses these words, it is a compact draft. I like that, a compact draft of our common law as common law applies to government. It's not the sum total of our common law. It's just what we've laid down as a brief of fundamental principles. It explains nothing. Read it. It doesn't explain anything. It doesn't tell you what a jury is. It doesn't tell you what a dollar is. It mentions a dollar. It doesn't tell you what that is. It doesn't expound or explain anything. And it's not intended to because, of course, in that day, Americans, the colonials, there were about 3 million of us then, 3 million of us. We were utterly overwhelmed and awash in the language of the common law, the thinking of the common law, the laws of nature. That's our common law. That's process. The laws of nature is God. That's the Bible. That's process and substance. But we were awash in both of those. Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, which essentially the Commentaries on the Common Law came out, 4 volumes, just before the Americans' separation from Britain, the war. There were 8 million people approximately in England at that time, and his commentary sold more in the United States by far and away than they did in England. 3 million people here, 8 million people there. By the way, the number of copies sold in the United States compared to England and who sold them and a list of some of the men that we know bought them because they were on the printer's list, and they ordered them. You can find a section about Blackstone's commentaries, the effect on America, in that volume, Excellence of the Common Law, Comparative Law Text. You can find that book, Excellence of the Common Law, at commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Click on the button that says books. And it'll have a lot said about it. It'll describe it and show you how you can obtain a copy. I have a section there about Blackstone and the effect of Blackstone. So our common law was, people knew the limits of it. They understood it. It was what gave us fellowship was our common law, not to mention our Christianity, because, of course, you can't, as Justice Story says in his commentaries that I recommended so strongly a while ago, he says there never has been a time. Never has been a time that Christianity did not lie at the foundation of our common law. Well, now, that's going back a long ways, and he intended to go back a long ways. If he wanted to advance anything in this world, he had devoted his life to advancing our common law. And he fought some tough battles, as I'd mentioned a while ago, because there was a movement afoot. The evil empire saw the American hatred of the English, and they wanted then to persuade Americans to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Everything about England is bad, including our common law. There was a fellow that lectured throughout the United States. His name escapes me right now. He was pushing, he was the spearhead trying to get rid of the common law. And they did just like they're doing with Agenda 21 now, and the other crazy thing, all this environmental baloney. They couldn't get it through the federal government, so in that day they couldn't get it through the federal government, so they tried to state by state eradicate our common law, our jury system, all of that, amazingly. Well, we kicked back. We didn't kick too hard. It was close. We almost didn't make it. Like I said, in Missouri, one vote. In Kentucky, one vote. And I won't catalog the rest of the states. But that's what happened to us. We faced that same problem today. We have never faced any other problem in America to our freedoms. Never, really. Than the problem that says, we're going to get rid of the common law. We're going to get rid of it here in this section, or we're going to get rid of it here in this state, or we're going to get rid of it, we're going to declare it gone like Utah did. That's madness. We're going to take away the common law courses from first-year law students at Harvard. They did that in 2006. That's the kind of battle we're facing, because all of our battles come down to one thing for our freedom. Are we going to do the will of God? That means his law. The laws of nature and the laws of nature is God. The laws of nature unwritten and the nature of things and the laws of nature is God written in the Bible. Are we going to follow that? Or are we going to follow the law of some man named Muhammad, or the law of some man as he speaks ex cathedra from the chair, the Pope of Rome? Or are we going to obey the law of Phariseeism as those principles are pushed through the economic system? This is no small matter, and the onslaught has never been greater. And it's important that we follow God's law. God says this. He says, if you do that, know your jurisdiction. Every man know your jurisdiction. And every man has one, and every woman has one too, by the way. I was talking to my daughters about this just the other day. Every woman has a jurisdiction. How many women know it? How many women even think about it? Married women. Husbands have a jurisdiction. Married women do, too. Not least of all is their husband's body. That's an important jurisdiction. And that's what holds the world together, by the way, is adhering to that fact of God's jurisdiction, among other things. But just to start, that's a good place to start. Let's know our jurisdiction. Personally, it's amazing. We all like to watch. Amazing, yes, it is. I should not be amazed. I get pulled away by the distant drums, too. I hear them pounding, and I want to listen, and I want to go see. And people they want to fix the government. Well, I want to fix the government, too. But I know that the way to do that, you know, watching all the politics, the way to do that, I got to first recognize who I am and what my duties are right now, right here. Not in the White House, not in the State House, in my house, right now, and the jurisdictions I have. Well, I went off on a tangent, Eric. I apologize for you doing that. But at the same time, I think it's important.
Yeah. No, all that stuff is awesome. I'm glad you said it. All right.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, let me just ask you this. On your, you and Gerard and John, you guys anticipate my questions. I think it's interesting. You mentioned something that I found unbelievable on your this. I think it was most recent Saturday Bible study, and it's about Roe versus Wade. Now I was thinking about Roe versus Wade because if it's true about the balance of powers and that the Supreme Court doesn't have the final word on anything, because we have the final word at the local level, then can we not at our local levels turn charge doctors who perform abortions? Can we not charge them with murder and just say to heck with Roe versus Wade, because it's not our law, it's not our law at all. And just because 5 out of 4 or 5 out of 9 say that it is, but it's a balance of powers, this doesn't apply to us. It doesn't really apply to us. Am I wrong there? And then also, could you elaborate on what you were saying in the Bible study about how you and this other fellow questioned the very fellow who wrote the summary of Roe versus Wade, and that he did so in order to get rid of sexes? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, yeah, you did, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I said it was Justice Blackmun, and I think I said Justice Scalia. That was a mistake. I do that more often than that bothers me. But it was Justice Blackmun, and yeah, another fellow and I had an opportunity to talk to him. That's a long story, and if you want to hear the rest of that story, you can tune in on Saturday. That's another question. It's important, though, the whole idea of Roe v. Wade, because it has to do with the jurisdiction of the courts. We're seeing that problem now as these federal judges are coming along and saying, let me just answer the other question quickly. Yes, states, under state law, if states want to indict people for murder of babies, they ought to be doing it. They ought to be doing it. Murder's against the law. Who are we kidding? Let's quit talking about all the legal arguments, the ethical arguments. Cut it. Forget it. Murder's murder. It's always been murder. It will never change. And all people sitting around drinking vermouth and driving Lamborghinis and sipping vermouth and talking about selling baby parts, have we lost our minds? You know, maybe these people are talking about would like their bodies to be made into a lampshade, as the Nazis used to do with people after they died. This is, there's no sense talking to these people. They need to be indicted for murder, conspiracy to murder, period. Because this, number one, is against the covenants of God. Bring everything back, every law back, as God does, back to his covenant, his trust settlement with our grandpa, Adam. Be fruitful, multiply. That means have babies, don't murder them, have them. And then spread out over the land, scatter, dominate the land, put your energy into taking dominion. That means domination of the land according to God's terms. Take care of it, make it productive. That's it. And everything else that we do, and that's why we call our common law the law of the land, because it was called that by our forebears, because they understood the trust settlement of God. Listen, when people migrated from the continent to that island called England, they did so in a lot of cases because they could not, under the iron fist of the Roman Church, and Rome before that, before it took on the toga of Christianity. They couldn't do what they want. They couldn't fulfill those covenants. They couldn't farm the land. They couldn't spread out. They closed lands to them. They came to Britain. They drained the swamps, and they farmed the blasted land. That's what they wanted to do. There were monks that came from the continent that were Roman Catholic monks that said, this is crazy. We're not going to live under this kind of restraint anymore. Then people from Britain, of course, came to America for the same reason. They got tired. You couldn't even take a wool bag. When people came to America, it was against the law. It was a felony. If you had a bag of wool closer than 50 miles to the coast without certain letters written on it saying certain things a certain size, and if you got caught, it was a felony. Why? They were trying to control trade. They didn't want anything shipped out, taken down to the seacoast and shipped out on a boat someplace. Well, that's the kind of constraints that, and closing land, they did the same thing. Our Declaration of 76 says they were trying to do all those things here. But getting back to the question about, Blackmun, if you tune in Saturday, I'll tell the story about my encounter with one of my friends, who is now, last I heard, he was a state legislator in Missouri. But that was revealing in the extreme. It was a lesson to me that I never forgot about what really happens at the Supreme Court level. And there was perversion then, and it has multiplied exponentially since then. We now have people on the bench that aren't only denying the fundamental structures of family, but are denying their own sexuality and setting a horrible example, holding themselves up. They look foolish. They're shaking their fists at God, standing upon their goofy little soapboxes and saying, I don't want to be a woman. I want to be a man. And that's so contrary and it's so destructive. It's vexing us. Are we willing to live like that? Are we willing to live like Lot? Lot lost his family because he was foolish enough to go into that environment and stay there. Abraham said, no, I'm not going there. I'm going to go out here and just be a nomad and shepherd my sheep. I'm not going into that city. He lost his wife. He lost his children. Not all of them. Two daughters. And then his descendants, the Moabites, are all a product of incest because of it. Because of the confusion and the foolishness. Well, it gets worse from there. That's where we are, friends, neighbors, and relatives. And what are we going to do about it? Let's do something. Let's get local. Let's get local. You know, they shot Mr. Finnegan. They shot him because they were the evil empire, the world conspiracy type guys, the guys that are green, a conspiracy to do evil, to do wrong, commit a crime. They were afraid, and so they got a transgender cross-breeding government, cross-dressing governor in the state of Oregon to order him shot. And all he wanted to do was go down to a building and meet with some other people that were like-minded with him. Believe me, that scares the bejeebies out of these minions of the evil empire, these myrmidons who kill on command. It scares them to death that you, in your little jurisdiction, do the right thing. And that's where the power is. To know, and if they think we know what their jurisdiction is, it scares them even worse, and it scares them if we aren't shaken when they attacked, talking about this fellow in court that did a good job of presenting himself and wasn't shaken up. The Bible says that when they do these nasty things to you and they see your calm resolve, it scares them to death. I forget just how it's worded, but that's what it says. And I see it. I've seen it on more than one occasion. So it's important we know our jurisdiction. You can tune in Saturday morning. If you want to know how to tune in, you go to the website and see how to do all that. I'll tell the story. I'll try to remember to. By the way, if somebody would email me, so I don't forget to tell that story, because I did leave it a cliffhanger last time. But jurisdiction
I'll try
is important.
To do that.
Yeah, you can do that. And murder, yes. The states ought to be doing that. I agree. The states are sovereign, for crying out loud. And when it comes to things like this, they are bound to follow law and not follow non-law. It is non-law to say, and read about this fellow that went to prison for life. Where was it? Pennsylvania or New York? I forget. Philadelphia, wasn't it? And one of those places back there. I don't want to get them all mixed up, but he ran that abortion clinic, and he was reveling in the idea babies would be born alive, and he'd kill them. Finally, and he ran it. The place was a filthy place. They raided it. I don't remember his name. There's so much crazy stuff going on in their own day. There always has been, but really, it's reached a pitch now. We're at the edge. Are we going to scream and holler? Are we going to cry out? By the way, I was noticing the well-quoted verse, oft-quoted, 2 Chronicles 7:14: "If my people shall pray and humble themselves, I will hear and I will heal their land." Notice there. Notice it says people. People. Who is that? Always in the Bible, always refers to the same class. It refers to the males of our species, the men, the militia of the several states, we would apply it today, the third of the ancient Anglo-Saxons, the people of the United States, taken from the Bible, people. If my people will hear my voice, all the women in this country could do that. And it wouldn't change anything. Things would continue to get worse. Why? You got to have the men do it. You got to. If the men don't do it, it doesn't help. I mean, I'm glad women would have that point of view, but it will not heal the land, because the Bible says it won't. God said it won't. And I can see that when I think about the nature of things. If men don't do those things, the people means men. If the people don't do those things, you know, Paul says in the epistles that the sin, Adam's race wasn't plunged into darkness, his descendants, until Adam crossed the line and broke the law of God. Eve doing it was a bad thing, but that's not what drove us into despair. It was our father, Adam, our grandfather. The same thing's true of men today. Nothing's changed. We're responsible. In a way, the female of the species is not. She's responsible in a way we aren't. But that particular point is all through the Bible. It's the men. The men's got to do it. The men have to do something. How many churches do I see? The women take over. The men step back. They just watch. Well, it doesn't work that way, and it won't work. It's destroying us. And that's what's happening. We don't know our jurisdiction, the scope of our authority as men. And women, nobody teaches them. They go to church and they're fed rats and mice. They're not fed anything of any substance. What is substance? It is the will of our Creator. The will of God is the substance. How does it come to us? It comes in two volumes. And we haven't mastered those volumes. We don't need to look anyplace else yet. When we master those volumes, I doubt if we will in this life. But let's just go to what we know for sure. We're not even doing the fundamental simple things, like how do you get along with your wife? Well, you know your jurisdiction. And your children, you know your jurisdiction. And you respect the other fellow's jurisdiction. The Bible says honor all men. How do you do that? Practically speaking, that means you honor his fundamental duties. You do not infringe. You don't get over into his space. God has given him a jurisdiction. You leave it alone. You don't get over there and try to control him. You can't make his decision for him. And by the way, that means you defend yours, because another person can't make their decisions for you. And the other person that tries to do that won't answer for you. Not before God. You'll answer before God if you just follow along with another person. And therein lies the power of the juryman. He must think for himself. Therein lies the power of Donald Trump. He must think for himself. The federal judge says one thing. Did he take an oath to the federal judge in New York? No. He took an oath to support our Constitution with all of his being. And if he knows in his heart of hearts, and he really believes, and as Andrew Jackson said, and many other presidents have done, even now are doing, you do what you think's right. You have to. Come hell or high water. Hell or high water. I was in the city the other day, here in the Wabash Valley, and I saw a church on one of the main roads, and it had a sign above it. It was called the Hell or High Water Church. What does that mean? Well, I had to look it up a little bit. I found out later it meant that come hell or high water, they're going to do what God says. Well, that's one way to express it. But that's saying a lot. How deep is your conviction? Are you willing to do right what you know in your heart of hearts? Pick well what you know for sure. As one fellow said, famous congressman, he said, be sure you're right. Then go ahead. But don't go ahead until you're sure you're right. You got to be sure. How do you know you're sure? Get tested. Don't adjust the laws of nature and the laws of nature of God. Trust them. Go to it and check it out. The final rule of faith and practice is the laws of nature of God. Less enough on that response. I could talk longer, but I appreciate it, Eric. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. Go to the next caller here. Looks like Jeremiah. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, Jeremiah. Jeremiah. Sounds like he's trimming his nails back there. You've been unmuted. I think he fell asleep. Okay, well, we'll try Larry. Jeremiah, get back in. There's not that many people. You'll be back up again. Okay, it looks like the next person is Larry from South Dakota.
Is Larry from South Dakota.
Yeah.
I've been in conversation with Jan and John earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're here, Larry.
Yeah, you may remember me. And I was called before a grand jury, a puppet grand jury, controlled by the prosecutor. They did convict me and came and arrested me and hauled myself and my companion for 15 years, even though they don't recognize common law marriage in South Dakota. She and I live as man and wife. They hauled us both to jail. Spent 24 hours in jail. They let us out on the personal recognizance, but the restrictions are horrendous. I tried to represent myself. They would not allow it. They assigned me a court-appointed attorney. I tried. He allowed me to present to the judge and speak. And I tried to represent myself, and she said, if you want to do that, you go back to jail. Well, so I'm 82 years old. My blood pressure in one night in jail went up to 256 over 126. I realized I wouldn't last two or three days in jail. So I accepted their court-appointed attorney. But one of the restrictions is that my companion has nothing to do with anything about this, was also arrested, and she and I cannot live in the home she and I own together under a land trust. The orders were that I could have no contact with her. I could not stay in that house. And so consequently, I moved into a basement apartment and am living here in despair. Awaiting trial, I had no choice but to use an attorney because that's what I was forced to do. I did have very good knowledge about the Constitution, the law of the nations, the Magna Carta, through one of my researcher friends. And I represent myself very elegantly in court through two appeals. And I won the first appeal, partially. And that's what really upset the judge, is that he had never been overturned by a layperson before. I could not get any answers when I filed motions to the court. So I filed I charged them with criminal activities. The judge the DOJ, the U.S. attorneys, the FDA. I filed it with the Senate Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, the House Subcommittee on Judiciary, the DOJ Ethics Committee, with the County Sheriff, and with the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I filed that with the clerk of that court, which is responsible to we the people. That's the only person that ever answered. The clerk came back and said, I'm forwarding your complaint about the judge that denied you three times. He denied a request for trial by jury. I'm forwarding that to the Chief Justice of all the circuit courts of appeal. And that's the only communication I've had or had. No, the judge recused himself. The DOJ attorney sent a motion. He stepped down. But 2 weeks later, he served as prosecutor in the hearing that put me in jail. So that most of this is information. I'm not sure what National Liberty Alliance can do, but Jan and John, you are aware of my situation. You said you couldn't help any unless I was put in jail. Well, I was put in jail. And then I got myself released on my own recognizance, but the restrictions are severe. They invade my constitutional rights. And so I was forced to hire an attorney. And I, even though my research man, law researcher, I call him, and I did very well, but now this is something that you may be able to answer. I filed criminal charges against federal officials. When I met today with an attorney, he said, well, just because they're filed, that doesn't mean anybody's going to investigate them. I said, well, how, if you see an accident and I see a crime and I file that crime or report it, does not the person that hears that report have to investigate it? So I'm there now where I filed charges against the judge for denying me a trial by jury three times. And I filed charges against the Department of Justice, the FDA officials, that brought up a false and incorrect charge. And an incorrect jurisdiction. We challenged their jurisdiction. I did. I challenged their jurisdiction. The case was filed under a corporation that does not exist. And the judge said, oh, that's just a typo. And he changed the typo. The charges were filed under DBA, doing business as private membership associations. And I said, I'm not doing business as a private membership association. I'm the director of private membership associations. He said, oh, well, I rule that you are a private. I said, this case didn't address private membership associations. So therefore, I don't know how it can go forward. He said, I'm ruling that DBA is the same as private membership associations. And so I appealed all that. The appellate court kind of upheld, in a sense, and said what I appealed had to be narrowed and ruled constitutional. Well, in the final hearing of that, they heard the facts, and the government and myself both agreed that we narrowed it. And then the judge says, I don't care what you narrowed. I'm putting it all back. And on top of that, he said, I want doctor removed from in front of this name because he is a criminal. And that's my story. I just wanted to update you. I'm not sure there's anything you can do. You might be able to answer the question, where can I submit a file of criminal charges that somebody investigates, because I was told that unless you can get a prosecutor to investigate it, the charges are going to be just thrown in the wastebasket. So that's what I asked John. I'll ask that of you, or Gerard, or Jan, or whoever's listening.
Well, look, that is the problem we have. They don't care. They're lawless. They do what they want. They control the courts. And if you go into another judge, the judge will protect another judge. And this is the problem, and that's why we've started to do what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. Now, you know, your particular case, I don't remember the details. I've talked to so many people about so many cases. I don't remember when you brought your case to us. Maybe it was after we stopped doing habeas corpuses, and now we're trying to get back to it.
It was just before you stopped doing them. But
okay. But anyway, you know, I don't know the details. I know some people we talked with. Yeah, hang on a second. Maybe we can help you. But look, I know some people we talked to, and you know, we were going to try to help, but they wanted us to do things in a different way, and of course we wouldn't do it. I don't think that was the case with you, but that kind of thing happens also. People want to do things and write papers in a different way, and we're not going to go outside of the guidelines that we've set for ourselves. We try to stick to, as best we can, the rules of the court. We try to stick to, you know, procedures and try to, you know, do things like they do it as much as possible. At some point, we can't do it because it just doesn't work for common law. It just doesn't work for a court of justice trying to get done what we need to get done. Now, the only way you're going to get anything going is you take your affidavit, have an affidavit done, and file it with a grand jury. But that's another problem, because they control the grand jury. They're not going to allow anybody to hear that case.
John, when I met with the grand jury, I mean, they allowed me 15 minutes. That's all the time you have, 15 minutes. Well, my case was, I said I can't do this in 15 minutes, but I delivered to the grand jury a 180-page document placing 26.
They're not going to read it. They're not going to read it.
Well, that's what I said. So if a grand jury doesn't read it, where do we, the people, go?
Well, you got to boil your case down much more simpler than that. Look at, and I always tried to make all cases very simple. And you know, you need to beat it at the heart of the case. And the heart of the case is jurisdiction and due process. Those are the two points you have to go for. And that's where your battle is. Everything else it gets on top of the case that you can, if you wanted to bring it into court, you can bring it into court. You know, I remember talking with Bill Thornton numerous occasions, and he's mentioned from time to time, he said, John, what are you doing? Do you want to win or do you want to fight? You know, and when he first said that to me, it didn't hit me right at first. And then I thought about it and realized what he was saying. Go to where you can win. You can go after these people for violating your unalienable rights of due process. You can go to these people for hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown. There are two places. Plus, if you spend time in jail, you know, you're looking for restitution. You're looking for also that criminal charges to be filed against these people who criminally incarcerated you, didn't have the power or the authority. Also, didn't you say that you had a case and they wouldn't even give you a trial jury?
Three times.
Three times. No trial jury, and the judge made the decision, and he put you in jail, right?
Well, ultimately, the grand jury put me in jail with an indictment.
Well, okay, so the grand jury gave you an indictment, but what about a trial?
Well, I can get a trial maybe in 2 or 3 years. I'm 82 by then.
No. The grand jury can't put you in jail. The grand jury can only indict you.
They indicted me, and when they arrested me, I was put in jail. When they arrested me on the indictment, then the hearing.
What
was
the charges?
Oh, the charges are extensive, including mail fraud, bank fraud.
Okay, yeah, I'm somewhat familiar with your case now. I kind of remember some of it, and I know a couple cases similar to yours anyway. Okay.
Sidewalk.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that you still have to go before a jury. You still have to be able to have, get bail ultimately. And look at, you know, there's a lot more to that bail business than we realize.
I'm out on personal recognizance. It's not bail. But okay. One of the restrictions.
But my point is this: is you were put in jail.
They won't let me and my wife to live together.
Okay, but you were put in jail, correct? And how long did you spend in jail?
24 hours.
Okay, so that's not too bad. And I mean,
no, it's not
look,
too bad,
one day really rots. Believe me, I know.
I can't do that. When I asked the magistrate judge to allow me to go back to my own home, I have macular degeneration and cannot see without a magnifier. I can't even trim my own toenails. You know, I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but I have to depend on Freddie for a lot, and she depends on me for a lot. Now, we can't, we're restricted from seeing or having any contact with one another. So, therefore, I moved out of the house so she, because she has no place to go, I could find a place.
Okay, so there, some kind of court ruling was made.
Yes.
And are you still pending a trial?
Yes, and I had to finally, they wouldn't listen to me as an individual, even though I tried, so I had to use the court-appointed attorney. And my daughters both insisted I better get an attorney because I'm in over my head.
All right, well, look, here's what we can do. We're going back, and again, I don't know if it's going to be next week or next month. It depends on the group of people that we pull together, and I'm going to be meeting with them shortly to try to train them into the paperwork. And once they are trained in the paperwork, then we're going to start filing habeas corpuses again. That could be a week. It could be more. It depends on how savvy they are and able to working with paperwork. I mean, you know, all filing for habeas corpus ultimately is just a process. There's a petition, and then of course there is the process of then now filing within the court the habeas corpus and commanding the people to respond, they never do respond, at least not to one that's a common law process. They're not used to habeas corpus. They don't even do them anymore, it seems. But so they don't respond, and then there's a default, and then, of course, there's another paper that we filed that's really a contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And now our next move now is to show cause, bringing them into a court and pursuing them criminally if they're not going to do the right thing. We'll keep giving them that last chance. We've got one more last chance we're going to give these people, and then we're going to pursue them criminally. Now, where does that go?
No, that's where we come to, John. That's where we come to a question, big question mark, capital question mark.
Right.
There is no place that I can find in the Constitution. It says we have the right to redress our government, but there's no place it tells us who to redress it to without reprisal. And so consequently, when I addressed it to all those people I just previously announced,
right,
I was
again, because you can't go to the fox to ask the fox for justice. He's
well,
not
how do
it.
How do we do it then, John?
Well, then you got to go to a higher court. You got to go to another judge. All right, again, you know, I've mentioned
judge.
This numerous times, though, and my process, again, look, I just want to get out of court when I get pulled into court. That's all I want. I want to get out of court. I'm not interested really in getting money. I'm not interested in putting people
either.
In jail or anything. I mean, these people belong in jail, and if I could participate in putting them to jail, I would participate, but it's not going to happen. So the key thing really is getting rid of the judge. And now, you know, how do you get rid of a judge? You know, you got to object to everything he says. You can't give him a writ of error in front of himself. You can just make your objection. He may want more detail. I'll give it to you in writing.
But he's already recused himself. He's already recused.
Okay,
himself.
Fine. But did you add him to
the? There's another judge that's taken over.
Did you add him to as on the defendant's list? You see,
absolutely,
you got to pick the case
absolutely.
Yourself. Okay, then you take the next judge and you do the same thing again.
That's
now
that's
it does get kind of touchy. It does get kind of touchy because what you're doing is you're going after them criminally, okay? And they're going to tighten up, and one judge is going to protect another, and another going to protect
sure.
another, and so on and so forth. And then they're going to set you up and do all kinds of things. So
sure.
the question is, how do you get out of that, okay? And I don't know enough about the case to be able to tell you how to get out of that, and I may not be able to tell you how to get out of that. But, of course, there is the process of habeas corpus and letting us handle it from this position, if we can deal with the case and first of all, get the habeas corpus started up again. And that's the best I can tell you at this point.
Okay, well, I understand habeas corpus is to get me out of jail. I'm already out of jail.
It's more than that. It's not just getting you out of jail. If they can't answer, the case is dismissed. They default the case. They have to show cause. You have a right for them to. You have a right to hear your accusers. You have a right of due process for them to say this is what took place and swear to it. And they're not going to do it on our terms. They're going to do it on their terms only. And their terms are not real terms. You know, I got a paper of where, again, it's just a little phrase as when a lawyer writes a paper and he writes this little phrase. With a comma through his lawyer, comma, and then continues, and it makes it look like an affidavit. Everything is secondhand information. It's going through the lawyer, filtered through the lawyer, who is all hearsay, and you have to argue in court that point. The same thing with the prosecutor and everything else that's going on. The fact of the matter that the grand jury was a puppet grand jury, it always is, it always will be. Go get their handbook and you can see. Go get their questionnaire. You'll see they're puppets. Same thing with the trial jury.
I know that completely.
Well, that's what we're arguing. And we would argue on all the cases in the same way and go right to the focus of jurisdiction and due process, and the people aren't getting it. You want to go after an individual, then give them that due process, let them face their accuser, make them swear to it, and let's go from there. They don't do it.
The only accuser I had was the FDA saying I violated a labeling rule. That's the only
Again, I remember your case, yes.
Yeah.
Well, look it. Again,
all I can tell you is this.
If you want us to help you, keep an ear open when we open back up. Meanwhile, get your paperwork together. You probably have some of the old forms we had. You know, basically, we need basic information. You should know what we need. And be first in line to get in. We're gonna push them hard. We're going to now pull them into a case collectively here in New York, because this is a conspiracy across the country, because all these judges, all these courts are operating in the same way. They're all doing the same thing, and they're all protecting each other, and that's a crime. And here's another thing, okay? If what we are trying to uncover right now concerning the fact that no judge since 1991 has properly taken a proper oath of office, and therefore they're not in office, they committed a crime because they posed as a judge and they wasn't a judge just to begin with, okay? And we also spoke a little earlier this evening, I think we were speaking live on this, about the fact that what Trump can do. If we can get Trump to understand that these people didn't take their office, this is how we can get rid of all these bad judges right down the line. All he has to do is just fill in all those positions. Just start appointing judge after judge after judge, have them take real oaths, and all the other judges tell them to go home. And then bring him in for an imposter, being an imposter, making him believe he's a judge, and putting people in jail, executing all kinds of things that he had no authority to do. He knew his oath was wrong. Now, if this is correct, then we're looking into this.
Well, just for your information, John, I requested the judge to give me his oath, and he said I asked the judge and the DOJ and the U.S. attorney for their oath of office. I put a motion in to that.
Yeah, they're
effect.
Not going to give it to you.
No, they said we're patriots.
They're not
going
to give you the oath. They're not going to give you the bond. We're going to ask for them to, and they may or may not give it to us. But look, I'll tell you what, the back has got to break somewhere. We just got to continue the pressure. The fact that they haven't pushed back at us means that there's something going on there that they're concerned about. And now that we have a president in there that might understand what we're doing and might be right behind us. You know, look, there's still people.
Look at.
Let me just make another point here. This guy's been in office 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks, okay?
Sure.
We've already served our papers on him. We've already made the point to him that if these people out west continue to do what they're doing by abusing the people and grabbing the land and killing people, And you, you know, your cabinet, you need to make the commands in your cabinet down the line concerning these people down there in BLM or the FBI or whatever federal agency has out there.
FDA,
you
we mentioned FDA.
Huh?
So let me add this.
Let me finish my point here.
Okay,
this is very important because this is hope for you and it's hope for everyone else. Ali talked a little earlier and he made a really good point. And we all know that Trump has been focusing in out west for a long time. During his when he was campaigning, he was out there. He was interested. He wanted the paperwork. He asked for our paperwork. He wanted the paperwork that was in the court. He talked to all the people involved. He talked to the families. He got lots of information. I don't think he was wasting his time out there. He knows there's a problem in the court. And let's go where the smoke is greater, where the fire is bigger. And that's right out there at this point in time. So now he's in office, and I agree with Ali. I think there is a good likelihood he is looking into this, and he's going to let him go and give him more and more rope, but he wants to get all the names. I'm sure he's got someone down there investigating this at this point in time, and at one point in time, there's going to be a whole bunch of arrests, and that's going to be a big move for us. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen, but when Ali made that point a little earlier, and we've sent our paperwork to him, and he talks about the Constitution and talks about obeying the law, and he seems to be thumbing his nose at this judge who was telling him to break the law when he knows he has an oath. All this together says this may be what's going on. But something is going to happen. I know that something is going to happen. We don't know what it's going to be. But look, we're doing the right thing, and we're trusting in God, and it's up to him. And if it's his will for something to happen, he's going to make it happen. And I do believe
the National Liberty Alliance to consider one thing, and I got together with my senator, John Thune, and gave him a letter that he hand-carried to Senator Sessions, assuming Senator Sessions will be the AJ, and I had suggested this avenue, something that gets immediate reaction without court action. I suggested that they place a rule in place at the DOJ, that the DOJ cannot accept any government agency's case as a plaintiff. That means 60 government agencies that sue people through them. They not accept any case as a plaintiff unless that law or rule that the agency calls law has first been declared constitutional by the Supreme Court or its appointed committee.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but look at when
boy,
it comes
that would solve
to
things quickly.
When it comes to statutes, okay, it's really a matter of looking at the statutes and how far they go, because it is true we give our legislators certain power to write statutes concerning certain things, you know, commercial, business, and you know, different areas. And so you got to really look at that first. That's number one. Number two, what are they exaggerating the statutes? You see, fixing it in trying to fix this problem that you have through a Supreme Court ruling or something, or you know, something like that. That's not where the answer is. I'm going to tell you one more time, and sometimes I think people just aren't listening. Your case is a simple case, and it could be won on 2 points. It could be won on any one of 2 points. Okay, you have been hijacked to jurisdictions unknown. That's your case. Okay, you have never been given due process. That's your case. You are being tried or pursued to be tried by a person who is impersonating a judge. Why? Because he refuses to give you his oath and his bond, and you need to ask for his bond also. They don't have that either, okay? That's where your case is. You can fight the other part of that. You're never going to win. You're not going to get Congress to do anything. You're not going to get the Supreme Court to do anything. You're not going to get anyone to do anything. You fight the battle on that level that I'm trying to tell you right now. That's where you win. And that's a violation of unalienable rights, numerous unalienable rights, and you can go to town on all kinds of things that you can require.
Has anybody ever won on that premises?
On those jurisdictions? Well,
yes.
Let's put it this way. We have won a lot of cases by being thrown out of court. okay? You're not going to win a case. We won a case. I don't even want to get into some of these things. I'm very careful not, although we're talking about law and telling you certain things, we're not giving instructions here. We're not giving classes because those are the people that they get. They come after you. They waste your time. You go to, then they try to get you for subversion or some crazy, stupid thing. And so we try to shy away from that. But can you beat it is the question. Absolutely can you beat it. And the big thing is this, again, is trying to leverage the court and leverage the judges against the judges. You know what they'll do at some point when they see that they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place? Let's just dump this case and get rid of it, okay? And that's what you really want. If you want anything more than that, you're not going to get it. Now, on the other side of things, sure, if we can bring justice back into the courts and bring, you know, the common law, then, yeah, at that point in time, you can seek your restitution. Yeah, you can go out and after these people. I mean, you're not going to get blessed that you're doing it for vengeance, but if you are doing it because, you know, you really have been injured and you want your restitution, and it's up to the jury whether they're going to put them in jail or not, you know. Yeah, but that's on the other side of things. But can you win in court in words? Absolutely. Will they listen to your words? Will they control it and continue a kangaroo court? They're going to try like hell to do it. And if they succeed, then you're not going to win. But if you can break that situation up, if you can prevent that from happening, the best you'll probably get is they'll throw the case out.
I understand.
But again, you're fighting the wrong battle. You're trying 130 pages. Nobody's going to read that. Okay? I understand what you're saying, and you can make those things simple, but your facts and stuff are important, and you're piling them up, and you know you're talking about a trial here, not about making points as far as about your case that anyone's going to comprehend or read and really understand. I go back to the same thing. Okay,
jurisdiction's
unknown.
I know I've occupied
due process.
A lot of time. One final question: Is there any constitutional thing that says they cannot separate a man? I have not had any quarrel. There's no risk involved between Freddie and I, but we can't live together, can't talk. What is there any avenue to correct that?
Well, why not? They had no authority to do that.
I
don't
know
see
they
had authority to do that.
Yeah,
well, again, let me go back to the same thing.
2 years.
Let me go back to the same thing. Let me go back to the same thing. If you win, look, you got four things working for you here, and you're not focusing in on it, okay? And any one of those four things can win your case to the point of being thrown out, and anything they have to say about anything concerning you in a relationship with any other person just disappears. It no longer exists, okay? Because the case is out. It's thrown out. They got rid of it, okay? And again, I'm going to tell you where it's at. Due process. Jurisdiction's unknown.
I understand.
The fact that this guy is not a judge because he never took his oath and he refuses to give it to you.
I understand that.
And also,
but 2 years from now, by the time that gets to the trial by jury where I can prove that, I'll be dead. And so I don't really have that.
I don't think we have 2 years. I don't think it's going to take 2 years. I believe before we even knew Trump was going to get elected, what I can read the cards here, this is the year. Okay, not. I don't know absolutely, but you know everything I'm seeing, the pressure and what I see coming down on these people, the way they respond, and everything else. This is it. This is the year. Now that Trump's in, it looks even better than ever. Okay, but you know one of the big problems, we're trying to get to critical mass, and we're so close to it. You know. But we have a lot of people that just aren't putting their time into what needs to be done. If there was more shoulders up against the door here and pushing up against that spearhead to break through that door, if we had more shoulders on that, we'd be through.
Well, John, I put my shoulder in. I put it heavily in. And there's a lot of people like me that may not...
Yeah, but if you're talking about putting your shoulder in to fight your case, you're fighting the wrong battle. I keep telling you that.
Well,
why are you going to fight? Why are you going to argue a case?
John,
why are you going to argue a case in a court where the jurisdiction doesn't care about what you say?
Either I got that choice or go to jail.
No, hey, you fight the jurisdiction.
I did.
Did they charge his wife too?
Yes, they had a bunch of fictitious charges on her. She has nothing to do with anything.
So what their reasoning is your partner's in crime and they don't want you conspiring together. Is that the deal?
Yeah, they say we shouldn't talk to one another because we'll conspire to whip them.
Right.
John, just to make clear, I've heard you and I've listened to almost every one of your Monday night sessions. I've heard you talk the same thing for 3 years now, jurisdiction and justice.
Due process.
Jurisdiction in court with motions. Motions after motions.
You're not going to win. You're not going to win there. You got to take it into another court. You can't take it before. Look, I want to tell you, in the beginning when I started trying to figure this stuff out, I can't tell you how many times cases that we worked with helping people, they go before the judge, and the judge would look, okay, I decided I got jurisdiction. Let's move on, okay? You know, that frustrated me for a while, and the answer was so simple, you know. Ultimately, the answer became so simple. There's no way you go and ask the judge to have the concerning the jurisdiction or concerning any of these things, whether he has it or not. You don't ask him anything. You make the point on paper and you push it through. He's going to most likely ignore it, okay? And when he ignores it, you're going to object to everything he does, and then you move to the next step process. Now, you're in a federal-level court, right?
I appealed it.
And you're in a federal court.
Sent it back to the same judge to fix.
Okay, look it. But your case is in a federal court. Is it a federal offense, or are they claiming it's a state offense?
Well, it was started out as a civil case. Now they're claiming claiming federal offense, and we said, no, you have no jurisdiction in this state.
In a state court or a federal court?
Federal court, and we've challenged that jurisdiction over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah, I know. That's the tough part. You see, if it comes from the state court, you go right into the federal court, and the judge doesn't want to put himself at risk. He will do what he has to do to make that case work for the state, but on the federal level. But he doesn't have the skin in it like he'd have it in the federal case, and he doesn't want the skin.
I started as a federal case, John. I've never been in state court at all.
All right. Anyway, look at it. I've given you the best that I can. We've spent a lot of time.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate
your situation. But keep an ear open, and when we start the habeas corpuses up again, get your papers in quickly, and we'll try to get you up and moving and do the best we can to assist you from this end. No promises, but things are getting better and better. We got some new strategies that, you know, I don't know that anyone's ever tried these strategies, but when you look at how things work, why can't we do these things? And so we're not going to talk too much about that, but everything we're doing is going to be very different than any other case that we're aware of, and how we're going to operate the court and run things and how things are going to happen. And we know it's a battle up ahead, but again, we sure could use a lot more shoulders up against the door with us.
Well, you got my shoulder, and I know that there's a lot of people that are supporting what I'm doing, but they probably not necessarily listen to every Monday night sessions. But thank you for listening.
Here's the key thing. When the time comes and this door starts to crack open and people need to come up now, they need to step up. You know, everybody needs to step up. We need that critical mass. Without that critical mass, we're not going to make it. Now, again, we may get this critical mass if we get the support of the president.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Well,
our case to the president is going to be twofold. Ultimately, the corruption is just unbelievable. There's a conspiracy across this nation against the people. They cannot win in a court, and they're constantly being set up. But even worse than that, the jurisdictions are all unknown. They play the game with their rules. I've read through the rules, and it's woven with in rem process that takes them right into the regular processes of the court. The IRS uses that whole thing to do everything they got to do. They put together a sham court, you know, a make-believe court, and all this other stuff, and they're getting away with it. But the bottom line really ultimately comes to this. If what we're hearing is true, and we can bring this and prove this point, that every judge since 1991 has not taken a real oath of office, then they're not in office.
I heard you speak
only
about
we can make the president understand that he in one sweep can shut the whole system down by just filling the positions. Because they're not
That's
filled.
Hopeful.
They have and they don't have bonds either.
Can I say something here? Just Larry.
Yes,
you know,
John, I'm listening.
Going in there by yourself, they don't care too much. If you team with us and get some of our paperwork in with you, well, maybe they don't care about us, but we represent 6,000 people nationwide. We have a voice, and we have court watchers, and there's a certain pressure that gets. You see, court is a show. So if you put on a good show, you stand a better chance. They don't care about pushing you and your wife around because they get away with it all the time. But you see, when you go in with a team of people and they're starting to recognize who we are, and they're now all of a sudden you're like a porcupine, you're starting to stick them. And they got to be careful because you're putting stuff in on the record on them that's going to maybe come back and bite them. And that's where you'll get your win because, number one, they don't want certain things on the record because once it's on the record, you know, they're going to – it's there forever for people to see. They don't want you setting precedences that take their system down either. So you got to go in with a force of people, and that's what we represent. And that's where we've had our victories is that they saw all this coming, and they saw people teaming with us and people making phone calls and people showing up as court reporters, and that was more than they could take right there. Without even coming to a conclusion, and the judge starts getting nervous, and he breaks out in a rash, and before you know it, he's looking for a place to get the hell out of there, and that has happened on more than one occasion. So I'm just trying to encourage you that this is the time and the place and the season. You're in the right season right now, so just be encouraged. And look, sometimes you drop the rope, you play in tug of war, you got to pick the rope back up now. Yeah. So now come back in and come in with a team of people and try. And I don't know where you are, and I'm not, the more people you can get to help you locally to show up at the court and put the pressure on and do court watching and maybe even do some calling. Because we've had real good luck with the court watching system. That's a big part of it because they don't work well in the light. And what that does is it shines the light, and they can't hold up to it. And with Trump in office, he's shining the lights in all these corners. They're starting to get real antsy. So you could get very fortunate. You know what I mean? He may have bigger things in his closet than you, and he's going to flick you like a booger out of a stone.
I think that, okay? One of the big things is, and I probably invited this in a way, because years ago, I was trying to negotiate with the FDA, no luck. So I closed all the corporations and opened a private membership association. And that private membership association is guaranteed by contract by the Constitution. And it says that within our association, we can do what we want to with our health. And that's the basis I hung my hat on. Well, if the judge, which is paid by the DOJ, and the prosecuting attorney is a DOJ paid member, and the U.S. attorney is paid by the DOJ, and they all work to support the ugly left system, if that private membership association prevails, then every company wants to sell vitamin C or CoQ10 will form a PMA, and the FDA will lose all of their authority. Because I've even applied a Freedom of Information and Citizens Petition trying to get the FDA to say, on what grounds do you support or do you control PMAs? They never answer.
And they don't. And you know what? Your case is more important than you realize, because private member associations go also outside of the FDA.
That's what I'm saying.
Everything that they license, we can do in a private member association.
I understand that, and they're fearful of that.
They
want to make me as an example.
Exactly. John, look at You know, they license everything. They license working on cars. They license cutting hair. They license doing nails. If everybody joined a club and they say, oh, no, this is our nail club, it would kick the government out in a heartbeat. People want to drink unpasteurized milk. They'd start a private member association. They own the cow. If I want to work on cars and I don't want to do a registered repair shop like they require me to, guess what? We're a club. We all put money in. We work on the cars. You need to get the hell out of here when they come to the door. And that's what they're afraid of, John. That's what this case is.
Well, I understand that.
100%.
But the bottom line, is, look at our first and foremost most important thing that we the people need to do through the grand jury, and NLA is of course spearheading this work, is really to get justice back into the courts. That's the first and foremost thing. Look at, if we get the recognition of the grand jury, we start to put out indictments, people start to take positions in counties, become administrators for the grand jury, and it moves across the nation. It could move quite quickly across the nation. At that point, all of these problems not only disappear, you can go after restitution for all these problems. And you can deal with every one of these situations and turn the clock back, 200 years on all this stuff. So, but the first thing you got to do is you got to win the important battle that's going to win the war. There's a lot of little battles out there, but it's not going to win the war. Okay, it's just going to win a battle here and a battle there. We got to win the war. So we got to go for the gusto, and that's what we're trying to do. And again, it gets back to the same thing over and over and over again: jurisdictions unknown and due process. Those are violations of your unalienable rights to begin with, and that's war against the Constitution, war against the people. And these people don't even have the authority or the right to be in these offices, and they can be filled by the president again. I say, if we can make him understand this, it's a big, big move. And I think he's ready to make big moves like this. He wants to make big moves. We're trying. Our message to Trump ultimately is this: you could make all the changes you want, and you could take down as much. And he, believe me, the damage he's done took some of this stuff 20 years for them to establish, and in just days and the signing of a pen, and it's gone. Okay, they don't even know whether they're coming or going anymore. So he's blanket bombing them right now, ultimately. Okay, the bottom line at the end of the day and at the end of his presidency, if you don't get rid of the lawlessness, you haven't killed off the cancer, and we're only going to return. It's only a matter of time, and that's what we need this president to understand. And he may understand this already. But we're going to try to make sure that he understands that. That's our job.
Well, I'll tell you what I think he does understand, that the people have gotten to the point that if they don't start fixing it, people are going to start killing. FDA and judges and stuff are going to start dying in the streets. And that's where Kennedy said it can be a peaceful revolution or it can be bloody. And
the people won't do that per se, but the people may respond to something and do that per se. But we don't want to talk anyway.
I understand that, but when people, Jerry Clemente says, he says, when people have nothing to lose, they lose it. And when you have hundreds of thousands of people that have nothing to lose and they're losing it, they no longer have protection. The snake is eating its tail right
but
now.
Remember, that's part of their play plan anyway, though.
I understand that. But the thing is Trump understands that, and he's going after them. And if Larry can get them to the point where they know that he knows that they know, then they'll kick him out. But you're right. Look, he may not even have to go that far. When they answer our paperwork and they see the people are coming, And those judges realize that they're under scrutiny now from above them, not just from below them, but from above them, they're going to break. And I think you're right. I think it's like right around the corner. And that's why we have to persevere in this.
I want to say one final thing, that I've been on the line a long time, and I think it's educational. But I started about 3 years ago, and this process started. I had a gallbladder rupture, and I almost died from peritonitis. Then my son died from a brain tumor. And then I had to take over his business in the laser business, and he was the salesperson in the and all the all that part of it. I never did this before, and I only did this on an emergency basis, and then I had a heart attack, and so I'm not going to last much longer. So if I'm going to fight to the end, but I'm not going to last much longer. And the fact that they took away my wife and won't let me have her support with my eyesight, I can't see. I've got a situation here that won't wait much longer. But
okay, well, look it.
Let
me just tell you right now, why don't you do an affidavit on the pain and suffering and the separating of your wife and all that kind of stuff, and also follow the requirements we had on our questionnaires. You probably have copies of that. Follow
sure.
that to the process. Don't get into the court case at this point. You can come back later for that. Let's win the win the war, and then we can later.
John, listen, I don't have a choice. I either do this or they put me in jail. I wouldn't last 3 days in jail.
I understand but that's what I'm trying to tell you. Let's get the habeas corpus going through.
Well, it's gotta happen.
Let's challenge
tomorrow,
them on separating you
ready.
And your wife. Okay.
Got to happen tomorrow, not when you get ready, because they're just waiting for me to violate
right.
some
I understand
provision.
That. I understand what you're saying, and it could happen
jail.
This week. It could happen in a week. If the group we're pulling together are able to comprehend and work the paperwork quick enough and put things together and show that they can produce it, then we can start it.
Well, I
okay?
can get another affidavit tomorrow.
Well, you should start working on that and get it going. And, at that point, look, we're going to announce when it opens back up. It could be a week from now, and it could be more. I don't know. I can only do so many things. There's so many people working with us. They can only do so many things.
Sure.
We just need more people. Now, we did get together. 5 people are going to work on this project. That may be enough to get this thing going back up and going again. Definitely get some going in again, but we may have to, restrain how many comes through. We need more
sure.
help. If we can get 10 people,
yeah,
then we can
I understand.
Get
I understand that. But, John,
Larry,
and Gerard,
where are you in your trial? Are you scheduled for trial?
Oh no, the attorney as I said, they wouldn't allow me to represent myself, which I think is against the law.
Right.
But
what state are you
anyway,
in? What state are you in?
I either have this choice. Either I get
you're in South Dakota,
Larry.
Or
I go back to jail. That she gave me one choice. Either you take the attorney we've appointed you, or you go back to jail. I wouldn't last 3 days in jail. My blood pressure soared sleeping on that concrete. I wouldn't last 3 days. So for my own health and longevity, I had to take the attorney. Well, my daughters both insisted that a court-appointed attorney. We should get our own attorney. So I did that today. And he said this could take 2 years to get to trial, Gerard.
Okay, I just wanted to know where you were.
And is this civil? Is this still civil or is it criminal?
No, it's criminal. It's criminal.
Okay, right. And you're in South Dakota?
Yes.
Right.
Larry, are you at liberty to give me your last name? Can I find it in the news?
Well, it's been all over the front page in the Rapid City Journal.
Rapid City, what's your last name?
Lytle.
Hey, spell it, Larry.
L-Y-T-L-E.
Oh, okay. Larry Lytle, Rapid City, federal court
South
case.
Dakota.
Yeah, South Dakota. Thanks,
but
Larry.
I didn't read the journal article. My attorney said he read it, and he thinks... The guy that I hired just today, see, he read it, and he thinks it's a bunch of BS.
Where's your lawyer?
Yeah.
Where's your lawyer from?
He's from Rapid City.
Well, good.
And,
thanks,
but
Larry.
Anyway,
I'm
not even sure that I'm allowed to talk to you.
All right. Well, anyway, look, we'll see what we can do. Check back in a couple of days to a week, and
all
let's
right.
see what
all
happens.
All right. I appreciate you listening. I got in this call tonight is I wanted people to know that other people have all sorts of problems with property and stuff. This is a problem with how the government regulates us and wants to regulate private membership associations. It affects everybody in the nation.
I understand.
Yeah. All right. Good night, fellas.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay. Well, how much time?
Yeah, we only got a few minutes left, so.
Yeah. Okay. We got Sari, it looks like. I'll open it up. You only got a few minutes, so sorry we took so long, but I think it was important.
Yeah, hi, this is Sari. That's the way it's pronounced. I just wanted to update everybody on the Beacon 37. We are working towards inhabiting all those territories, especially South Dakota. We've got 9 colonies now. We're ready to do a committee of states so that we can start doing committee of states, and then we're going to get the CAFRA funds. We're going to go after the CAFRA funds. We're going to do a lot of investigating work, and we are going to get paid as soon as we get all 16 more territories. We have been promised a large sum of money to finish the job. So I'm just letting everybody know the update. For beacon37.com, we do 2 conference calls a week, and each nation state will be doing their own grand juries and will be completely lawful. So, you know,
well, maybe before we share this with our membership, maybe we should look a little into you. Once you get a hold of Jan, at you'll find him under our directory. Give him a call, and let's set a meeting up with me and you and Jan and maybe a few others. Give Jan the information on your site and stuff, and let us investigate, because we got to be real careful where people may go from information that's coming through, you know, our platform here through National Liberty Alliance, okay?
All right. I'll look up Jan's number. Okay,
yeah, find him
good.
Under the directory, and let's talk, okay?
All right. Very good. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you. Okay, Terry from New Jersey. Go ahead, buddy.
Hi. I know you guys were talking about...
By the way, you must be a mind reader there, by the way, Gerard, but go ahead, Terry. Sorry.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about social media earlier, and me and Gerard had talked about this a few weeks ago with regard to the lack of, for example, YouTube presence. I was wondering, because I have actually a couple of blogs set up, and there are different ones that you can do. For example, Blogspot is free. There are other ones like WordPress. You have to pay.
Are you talking about what we're trying to do to work with us on that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, then we have a meeting happening tomorrow. Get a hold of Jan. Are you coming to that meeting?
I will, yes.
What time is the meeting, John?
Well, get a hold of Jan, because it's a closed meeting.
Yeah, I can.
It's really, yeah.
Give me a call,
but let's
Terry.
Let's have Terry get there, because he sounds like he could really help us in
yeah, Terry part. Will be good on that, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. So.
But what we do have is inside of our program, you know, the we use Drupal, okay? Inside Drupal, we do have a blog setup abilities here. And so, you know, we can set things up for people to do blogging. But again, you know, we want them to be working on the important focuses, and this is what we'll be discussing. So, okay?
Okay, I yield.
Thank you,
Terry.
Thank you.
I think we're done, John.
Yeah, it's, we got another 2 minutes. We take one more caller. Let's take, I think Jeremiah's next, isn't he?
Let me see.
Let's
here.
Go to Jeremiah. Go right ahead, Jeremiah. You only got 2 minutes, though. We lost him earlier. He was up on front.
He was,
but he must
clipping
have walked
his
away.
Nails. I heard him.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
I think he's still clipping them. Jeremiah.
Right, look it. Let's close the queue, clear the queue. End the program for the night. We appreciate everyone coming. And Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And please, you know, we have the Committee of Safety meeting. Jen, what day is that on? The Committee of Safety. That's Thursday at 9,
I think, right? Thursday,
yes.
Right, Thursday at 9 o'clock.
Hey, I was going to tell everybody to go watch that New Hampshire video, 51. What's the name of that?
52, Inform New Hampshire.
Inform New Hampshire 52. With Rich Merritt. It's really, really good, you know, for people setting up committees of safety and stuff. And he's talking about the power of the police and how to talk to them and stuff. And I just, It just happened to ring a chord with me because I understand a lot of that stuff. I move in those circles, and I thought he did a really good job, and I think our membership should be using that. Rich is a member of ours. He supports us. He has his own show, and he did a that one was so good. I think everybody should look at it. It's on YouTube.
I think most of the shows are good.
Oh, they're all good. They're all good. Yeah. But that one in particular struck a chord with me because it's like right up the alley of what we're trying to accomplish right now. And right now it's that whole business of your relationship with your officials. And he's an ex-law enforcement kind of guy. And the two guys, they do such a good job, and they talk about talking to the police. And I just think they had a lot of really good ideas, and it's only a half hour. It's actually a video that you could maybe even use with your sheriff or somebody like that, you know what I mean, or any other official out there. So I just wanted to plug it. I know it's late. I should have done it earlier. Maybe I'll do it again next week too, but it's that
right.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And again, remember everyone, get involved, join one of our committees, and we need a lot of research stuff going on, so let's get together and work. Okay. Appreciate
thank you,
everyone
everybody.
Coming. Thank you. Good night.
A secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair, and she broke your throne, and she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah, hallelujah. God above, as for me, all I ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. But it's not a cry that you hear tonight. It's not some pilgrim who claims to have seen the light. No, it's a cold, and it's a very I know this room, and I've walked this floor. You see, I used to live alone before I knew you. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love, love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a cold and it's a very lonely hallelujah. Hallelujah. Let me know what's really going on below. But now, now you never even show it to me, do you? I remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove she was moving too, and every single breath that we drew was done my best. I know it wasn't much. I couldn't feel, so I learned to touch. I've told the truth. I didn't come here to London just to fool you. And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand right here before the Lord of Song with nothing, nothing on my tongue. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.